Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And it was a week with a lot of hard work in it. But I'm home. I'm back in my happy place, my happy little studio in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West Pycod, Virginia, and I can't tell you how happy I am to be here. Pittsburgh is, in fact, one of my favorite cities in the United States, without a doubt. But there ain't no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Amen. Amen. Still, I was really, really proud of what we were able to accomplish on Rick Smith's behalf up at the state meeting of the AFL-CIO in Pittsburgh. It was several days of pretty serious work, but we proved something. We proved that the horn can do for a fraction of the cost what major media organizations do for tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not a million. Because we broadcast those proceedings, and we did so, I would say, pretty competently. And therein lies a roadmap to a future that, frankly, liberals, whether you be a pro-labor liberal, a pro-environment liberal, a gender equity liberal, whatever kind of liberal you are, this is the road we must absolutely go down. And like I said, I was proud to accomplish what we did accomplish. We put up 3 days of three-hour sessions and made it work. And down the road, there is a way to do it with even more verve and even more panache and even more equipment, even more people. But we did amazing work. And I met some amazing people, too. Had some absolutely magnificent conversations with some labor activists there in Pennsylvania. And was pleased to get to know the folks that I indeed did get to know. But I'm home now, and I'm happy about that. And I'm home on a Friday. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. And what a day for it. Oh, my goodness gracious, I just about had to be dragged into the studio. It is exquisite outside. High, fleeting clouds in a blue sky. Warm, warm spring sunshine on your back. Just a beautiful day. Sweet, sweet spring day in April. So come on up on the front porch. Put your feet up on the rail. We got a bunch of long necks in ice. Sweet tea for those of you who don't do that. And let's cuss and discuss. See what's on your mind. I've been away from the microphone for 4 solid days. I don't know what's on your mind. I've been focused on the things at hand, although I've tried to keep up with the news as best I could along the way. And, I don't think we're going to be wanting for stuff to discuss this evening. And in a way, you know, I could save this for Moran Monday, but it wouldn't be fresh then. I wonder sometimes if Flush Flimball is one of those guys we ought to retire from competition in Moran Monday, but I say no. I say no. And why? Because the oxymoron constantly lowers the bar for himself into new and even more ignorant levels of manifestations of stupidity. Now, I don't know if you've been following this, but simply because it's something that happened around here, and of course, you know, you can always expect a dog to his to return to his own vomit. Rush, you can expect that Rush Limbaugh would try to find some way, to capitalize or make hay off of the misery that arose out of the Massey disaster at Upper Big Branch. Now, I'm not going to spend the evening on Upper Big Branch. You know everything there is to know. But this business with Flush Flimball is a whole brand new level of stupid. And I mean that. And it goes back to last Friday. Last Friday, Flush Flimball asked the following with regard to the Upper Big Branch disaster.
There you go. We worked on mine safety. Bird, Rockefeller, we worked on mine safety in the Senate. But more needs to be done. Well, they didn't get anything done. Was there no union responsibility for improving mine safety? Where was the union here? Where was the union? Now, the union's generally holding these companies up, demanding all kinds of safety. Why were these miners continuing to work in what apparently was an unsafe atmosphere?
Okay, so you got that, right? Rush Limbaugh, dumber than a bag of homemade stupid, arguing that it was the UMWA's fault that Upper Big Branch blew up. No, this is one of those things where I wouldn't expect you just to take my word for it. I want you to hear that idiot. I want you to hear that drug-addled jackass. I want you to hear the oxymoron blaming the UMWA for an explosion in a mine that they had tried desperately to organize on three separate occasions. The UMWA understood that it was dealing with a life-or-death situation. So a lot of people a week ago called Flush Flimball on that claim that it was a union mine. Well, yesterday, Thursday, the oxymoron got back on the air and fired back, saying that, yes, by God, there were union miners at Upper Big Branch. Don't take my word for it again.
And we're back, Rush Limbaugh, behind the golden EIB microphone. So I checked the email during the break, and a bunch of people, hey, Rush, there was no union at that mine, at that Massey mine, there was no union. Blankenship kept the union out of there. You can't blame the union for it. The left are trying to blame the Massey disaster on its union busting, in fact. But in 2009, the National Labor Relations Board agreed with the decision that Massey Energy rehire 85 coal miners who said they had been discriminated against because they were union members. So there were union workers there, and so the United Mine Workers should have been overseeing their safety, United Mine Workers of America. There were union workers at that mine, and the left is trying to say, you can't say that, Limbaugh, why there's a non-union shop. That SOB CEO got rid of all the... No, no, he agreed to bring back 85 of them. So, you know, you people, it's been 21 years.
This is the funny part. Okay, I'm going to stop this for a minute just for a quick review. Do we understand the ancient Greek concept of hubris? That people who take inordinate pride in things manifest inordinate degrees of braggadocio the gods themselves have a great comeuppance coming for them. This is one of those moments. America's truth detector, Flush Flemball. Give me another handful of pills. I'm going to back this up just a hair so you can get the full comedic effect of this. This is precious. This is one for the ages. This is $40 million a year broadcast quality. It would be hilarious if it wasn't so damnably sad. So here we go.
Rid of all the... No, no, he agreed to bring back 85 of them. So, you know, you people, it's been 21 years. At some point, you are going to learn. If you go up against me on a challenge of fact, you are going to be wrong. Just that simple. New...
Oh, what a jackass. Oh, what a maroon. What a non-com poop. Yeah, I knew I should have taken that left lane at Albuquerque. So here's how that all happened. One of Flush's little not very good at it fact checkers went and found a story by Ken Ward Jr., a friend of mine, about the fact that Massey got busted in a National Labor Relations Board suit for what it did to the 85 union miners down at the Cannleton operation, which had been run by Horizon Energy until it was conveniently bankrupted, and the pensions were canceled, and the health care was canceled, and the union miners were thrown out on the street with one of the union miners' wives in the midst of breast cancer treatment. No, really. And here a few months ago, you may have heard Boss Man Wayne when he called in and explained that Massey had finally lost the suit and they were going to have to do back pay and compensate these miners for what was done to them when they were unfairly and improperly and illegally terminated. And those are the 85 miners that Flush Flemball is talking about. Shh. Don't tell the oxymoron who's clearly back on the pills. But those were different miners. Those were miners down at what is now called Massey's Mammoth Operations at Cannleton, about 25, 30 minutes down the mountain from me here. They are different from the miners who were at a different mine called Upper Big Branch that blew straight to hell a week or a little more, almost 2 weeks ago. Different miners altogether. But see, where working people are concerned, where people who don't make $40 million a year and don't send their maid out with a cigar box full of cash so she can bring it back with a cigar box full of illicit street drugs, you know, this guy who lives in a 26,000 square foot mansion with no one but his maid and his cat, because no other living thing on planet Earth can stand to share space with it, it being Flush Flemball, not it, the cat. Cats are far more human than Flush Flemball will ever hope to be. Now, see, working people, especially hillbillies, all look the same to Rush. They really do. So if Rush gets hold of a news story that says that there were 85 union miners who were forcibly sent back to work, not the miners, or Massey was forced to rehire them, that means that they... How do I put this? Have you ever altered your own conscience, your own consciousness, not conscience? Have you ever altered your own consciousness with some sort of substance, whether it's, you know, too many beers at a ball game or, you know, the Christmas party with the lamp? I love you, man. Or, you know, maybe you've done the pain pill thing or the whatever thing, you know, whatever. You know, like George W. Bush, you know, I'm not going to talk about my misspent youth. You know. Well, when you do that long enough, you literally rewire what is left of the functioning remainder of your brain. And that's what's happened to Rusty Limbaugh, formerly known of as Jeff Christie of Pittsburgh radio fame. That's what happens. You kill chunks of your brain. And then, you know, when you're, he was a son of privilege to begin with. His dad was a hotshot lawyer. Rush Limbaugh never wanted for anything. Rush Limbaugh has never worked a day in his life. And he wouldn't know a coal mine from a Walmart because he wouldn't go in either one. And so when he finds a story that says, you know, 85 union miners were rehired by Massey, well, by definition, that means there had to be union miners at Upper Big Branch, except for one thing. There weren't! There weren't. On one occasion, on one attempt to organize that mine, the UMWA got 70% to 30% card signatures. Now, if we had the Employee Free Choice Act, that would have been the end of it, and it would be an organized mine. But we don't have the Employee Free Choice Act. So what happened after that is Don Blankenship made a very rare appearance down inside that mine. Jesus, where's the justice in the universe? If that horror had to happen, if that gassy hole had to blow, why couldn't it have blown when that evil bastard was down in it? Oh, I'm sure they had all the dust pumps and all the ventilation working very well when Don went down in, don't you know? Because that fat-ass precious hide is way, way too important to ever run the risk of an accident happening when he's underground. But at any rate, he went underground and he'd come up to a miner working maybe working the face or running the man trip, whatever. He'd say, "Stop what you're doing for a minute. It's okay, you're still on the clock. I need to explain something to you." Now, I don't know if you're one of the 70% of the people in this mine that signed a union card. I don't know. Wait a minute, I got to get into Blankenship mode. Stop work for a minute there, boy. Now, I don't know if you're one of them people that signed that communist union card. I ain't got no way of knowing that. But I'll tell you what. If you vote for a union, I'm going to shut this mine down, and you're going to be out of work. And I will. I'll shut this mine down before I'll ever see it go union. You understand me, son? I thought you did. And he went all over that mine telling these guys exactly that, over and over and over and over again. And then he loaded up a couple of busloads of them with their wives and so forth and took them all to Dollywood. Hee-haw! Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? And you know what? The first thing, I'll shut this mine down, is illegal as hell. But law means nothing to Don Blankenship. It is not even, it's not even an impediment. It's not even a nuisance. It is something there that he ignores because he has vast amounts of money that he thinks he can use to buy his way out of it. Right? Yeah. And so the vote was taken. And the vote was 50-50. 50% to 50% to organize that mine. And here's the fun. Here's the punchline. In an organizing campaign, a 50-50 vote, the tie goes to the company. On a 50-50 vote, the union loses. And when when one side is saying you're going to lose your job, and then bolsters that by saying, but in the meantime, I'm taking y'all to Dollywood. And the only thing that the UMWA had to counter that was, we just want to see you live until you can retire. It's a tough nut to crack. So there's all kinds of reality there. And by the way, after the last union organizing drive failed, Don Blankenship, realizing that they wouldn't be coming back, cut the bonuses in half and increased the hours by 50%. You do the math. Half again as much work for half again as less money. Yeah, how'd that vote work out for you, fellas? And by the way, a little fact, and this is important because I know by God we did say these things. If you've ever wondered what the importance is of the horn, this is part of it. Andrew Tindall paid a lot of attention to the nightly network news coverage of the Upper Big Branch Massey disaster, and he wrote the following. Not once in all 5 days of coverage did a single reporter mention the organization that has worked the hardest over the decades to make sure that mining management does not cut safety corners and that miners can monitor their own working conditions with impunity. The union went unmentioned, as did the fact that Upper Big Branch workforce went unorganized. Not once. Here, though, we are slavishly devoted to facts. And we mentioned it repeatedly. While the multimillionaires of the for-profit media couldn't even bring themselves to think about saying anything. Yeah, and by the way, from the by-the-way department, those 85 union miners that Flush Flimball, the junkie, the oxymoron, said were back on the job, and therefore the union had to be somewhat at fault for the explosion at Upper Big Branch. Massey appealed that NLRB decision, just like I said they would when Boss Man Wayne was telling us about it. And because they appealed it, well, they still, haven't been rehired. So they're still not on the job. But see, this is a frustrating thing for me. Because I can tell you all this, and I can give you these facts, and you know them to be facts. You know that they're real. But however many millions there are of people who listen to Flush Flimball, they'll never get any of that. Because they won't be disabused of Rush Limbaugh's mendacity, of his propensity for lying. Email rolling in from David in Tennessee, talking about Rush speaking. You hear that nasally tone? That's the tone of a user, timing his doses so he's got two or three good hours for stage or microphone. David says, Bob, I have stand next to him and take him to the stage familiarity with such vocal tones. Rush Limbaugh is still, and I'm saying this, David didn't, I have a feeling he would probably echo this. Rush Limbaugh is still on the junk. But again, his devoted ditto heads don't know it. Marty says, welcome back, Bob. Please don't include Limbaugh on us again. I feel my IQ dropping with every syllable. I know. Also noting, evil is a preservative, Bob. Blankenship will live to be as old and evil as one of the Rockefellers. God, please let it not be so. But there's every possibility that it will be. So I felt like we kind of had to start with this simply as an object lesson in the lies that filthy wingnuts like Rush Limbaugh are willing to tell. See, there's no facts involved with it. It is made up crap. You remember a month or so ago when we were talking about Fox News and I said Fox News is only a brand name. There's no news in Fox News. Well, there's no truth in America's truth detector, or maybe he's America's truth detector, and every time something says, beep, truth, he goes the other way. This is the battle that we fight. This is the struggle in which we are engaged. Armed with our facts and our little internet radio stations and our constant struggle to survive, we battle against $40 million a year lying junkies. Tough. Tough. But that's not the be-all and end-all of the show. Of course, it's Friday on the front porch, and I want to hear from you. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, H-E-A-D-O-N. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Either way is fine by me. Email rolls in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. I'm mighty happy to be back amongst you. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. Light 'em up!
Quit school when she was 17. Senator on TV called her welfare queen. Used to be daddy's little girl. Now she needs help in this mean old world. Buys cassette tapes in the bargain bin. Loves Carlene Carter and Loretta Lynn. Tries to have fun on a Saturday night. Sunday morning don't shine too bright. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance to the welfare music. Will she ever stand a chance? But one ain't here still. Chasing women and drinking beer. Says nobody understands how he feels. But that don't pay them monthly bills. Angry fat man on the radio. Wants to keep his taxes way down low. Says there ought to be a law. Angriest man you ever saw. Well, Baby, get up. Baby needs a drink from a loving cup. It's welfare music. Watch the baby dance.
Do any of us ever stand a chance as long as right-wingers are in power and control the media? Well, even when they're not in power, damn, you know? They're not in power right now, but they get more play and more talk on the for-profit media than we could even count. You know, I've got... I saw an email roll through, I guess it was last night, an inquiry from our buddy Brian in New Hampshire. You know, why do Bob and Mike and all these people spend so much time on the teabaggers when they're not worth the time? And just so you'll know, I actually do take my email very seriously, and I take critiques very seriously. And let me explain something. There may not be a lot of teabaggers, but they're all dangerous. And as a collective, they can wreck this country. Don't think they can't, because they can, and they aim to. Let me find him here. I got it right here. For some reason known but to God, there was a teabagging rally yesterday in New York City, and who did they invite? Oh, they invited Lou Dobbs. Those teabaggers did. Now, this is not the fraud circus freak sideshow in Cincinnati where Sean Hannity got busted, you know, for performing a hustle that even Fox thought was improper. Now, this was a New York teabagging gathering, and Lou Dobbs said to them, "You're scaring the hell out of them. You, my friends, are dangerous, and I love that about you." Yeah, he said that. He really, really did. And you know what? They are dangerous. Now, I want to make sure that I hit this this evening. Former President Clinton spoke at the Center for American Progress Action Fund earlier today, and he had some rather telling remarks. And I want to share them later, because it all ties together in this. I want first, this is Friday on the front porch, and it's lonesome up here on the front porch without any company, and I want to see to it that we get some company on the porch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, sir, it's Lee.
Hey, Lee, what's up, man?
Not much, and unfortunately, I've caught most of what you're saying on the phone, so, I mean, I'm not where I was listening live. Did you hear, by the way, to completely go in a different direction, because if I got the gist right from you, Rush is blaming the upper big branch on the union?
Yeah, right. That's what opened the show.
What a prick. But, okay, I just want to make sure so I could register that to go post.
You know, I personally think you've just insulted pricks all around the globe.
So all men? Are you talking?
No. That was wow. Okay, I've been away from the microphone too long. That was a passing attempt at humor. And it's like saying, you know, don't call George Bush a chimp because it's an insult to the chimps. Don't call Rush Limbaugh a prick because it's an insult to the pricks.
Oh, I know. It's just I've known some horrendous ones. So it's just we've just come up with a new class of scum. I'm guessing is what you're saying.
Look, he's a junkie.
Yeah.
He's a junkie. He gets $40 million a year to slither in behind a microphone and make junkie talk.
or, as Mike says, run protection racket for the corporations.
Well, that's part of junkie talk. That's junkie behavior. You know, always stand up for your dealer, man.
Right, but isn't that ironic that's the guy that's rotting everybody else's brain? You know.
That's contagious.
But sorry. So not to sidetrack myself too much, because I'll chase rabbits all day long. Jack Harrah died yesterday.
Okay, help me here. Yeah, that's kind of out of the blue.
The Emperor Wears No Clothes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The grandfather of the pot legalization movement is gone.
Oh, okay.
And he there's a wonderful movie out there on him. I mean, it's got a great soundtrack, yada yada yada. But I mean, it's just really professionally done, called The Emperor of Hemp, and it's worth checking out. I mean, because he's the guy that brought the light, like the Hemp for Victory farm the Hemp for Victory movie that disappeared, that the government put out because we couldn't get Manila hemp anymore once the Japanese took the Philippines. And just and like I said, I mean, it's important because of biofuel plus the food value, yada yada yada. By the way, I guess you can go ahead and hang up on me if I do the three yada thing three times in a row. So
no, that's that's Beetlejuice, and that just makes me disappear and wind up in a bad movie.
But the what was it? Oh, so to get back to the bio thing. I've got friends here, and this sounds stupid, so I don't know a good way to phrase it. I've got friends here that have some contacts, and this is not broken story-wise yet, but Rick Perry apparently pulled back, he pulled back a couple of things, and one is, like, whatever credits that were going toward wind farms, and this thing hadn't hit the news yet, but he also pulled back the penny a gallon kickback to manufacturers of biofuel. So, Texas is just being Texas as they, eliminate founding fathers from the history book, yada, yada.
Forget about it, Jake. It's Texas town.
but so there's that. And then my girlfriend called out a story to me, and she's major environment, all this other stuff. But have you seen any of the follow-ups on what went down on the Barrier Reef?
What, 2 mile scar or something like that?
Well, not only that, but apparently where the ship hit the reef, maybe we are talking about the same thing. Since you said scar, not the 2 mile trail that they supposedly contained or whatever, but the gouge that it put in that thing, apparently all this red paint from the boat that keeps algae from growing on the boat has scraped off on the reef.
Oh, nice. And that'll prevent things from growing on the reef.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then I had sent you a thing about this could possibly happen again, because they said traffic is up 67% in that area.
Yeah, because the coal heading for China, it's as close as the sea lanes have to 5 o'clock traffic.
Right. And that was the thing. I think I sent you, I think the name of that email was, so it's just a question of time, kind of thing. But, it's going to happen again.
And again, and again, and again. Sure.
Which brings up, and so, I mean, yes, I want my representatives, by the way, going like you say, hammer and tongs, making sure this bill, the health reform or health insurance reform does not, just turn into a total, hand job in a back alley for the insurance companies. At the same time, I don't know how busy our damn representatives are, because it's like I could be wrong. I bet you can find it's the same three or four that are doing the things to help us. That I'm guessing they're spread pretty freaking thin. You know what I mean? Because like you said, you don't want to see it's like fighting the seven-headed Hydra, and so you've got Blankenship, and so you're screaming about coal and you want clean energy, and at the same time you've got it, so I'm pretty sure he's not a healthcare guy, but so I'm just saying it's like the same three or four people that we can at least recognize to fight for us, whether it be Grayson or, you know, Bernie Frank or who's the senator from Vermont?
Bernie Sanders.
I'm sorry, Bernie Sanders, Barney Frank. You know, so you've got...
Yeah, don't leave out Kucinich.
And yeah, totally. And he was on that very short list I had in mind. I mean, so you've just got these three or four people that I'm guessing are going to have to fight like a multi-front war. You know what I mean? As far as legislation goes?
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, where we can, we got to elect real, you know, real progressives. Now that Bart Stupak has said that he's done, for instance, a real progressive said she was going to run against him in the primary in Michigan. Good on her. We got to make sure she gets elected.
Right, and yet at the same time, what's his name? I saw Matthews the other day attacking, was it the AFL-CIO guy? He had somebody on his show, and he was talking about, you guys are up here splitting the Democratic Party, you know.
What?
And because they were going, you're backing these candidates that are, you know, pro-labor, and do you really have a choice? And this was like on yesterday's Matthews show, and I thought it was an AFL-CIO guy. But so he was going, look, we're going to back the people that we think are going to do what's right for the worker. You know, and Matthews was going, so don't you just want to get a Democrat elected? And you know, because you're just going to, you know, screw whoever. And it's like, well, I'll take my chance if we don't get another Blanche Lincoln or is that the Arkansas one?
Yeah, that's the senator from Walmart.
Right. Right. So anyway, yeah, I guess it's everything I've got. I really wanted to call in last week and you know, express my sympathies or anything. Well, and it was just, you know, I think I got in line a couple of times and most certainly would have, but, you know, it didn't fall under the scheduling thing, if that makes sense. You know, and well, you already know where my sympathies lay anyway, you know, so it's, but, yeah, so, I mean, please don't think that wasn't on my mind. I mean, I think I got lost several Facebook friends, including a couple ex-girlfriends, so they got tired of hearing about me bitch about, you know, Cole, so, you know, whatever, you know, But my thoughts were certainly with you guys.
I saw the same thing happened over at Democratic Underground. I went over and posted a couple of things, and one of the things I posted was a reprint of my essay about, you know, we've all got a certain ownership stake in what happened there because of our relationship to coal and our relationship to foreign manufacturing. And lo and behold, someone, you know, ostensibly a liberal over at DU in liberal land, chimes in and says, not me, I guess we're all just, you know, we're liberals and we're just looking for things to be guilty about. Well, I don't feel guilty at all. Those men knew it was a dangerous job. And you know what? Don't feed the trolls. So I just left it alone.
The problem is those trolls are going to get more food, though. Did you see the deal about where... Comcast has been given the go-ahead with their two-tiered internet system. It was after the FCC said no way, and some judge stepped in and said, these guys don't have the right to regulate that way.
Well, but the thing, there's more to that Comcast decision than meets the eye.
Okay.
What the court said, as I read it, was that particular scheme didn't work. They didn't say that the FCC... flat out couldn't exercise that jurisdiction, and there's a difference between the two.
Well, remind me now. In the FCC law, isn't there like five people? One of them's Colin Powell's kid.
I think Michael Powell's gone from there now. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay. Oh, and I have to ask you about this. I sent you a thing a while back, and I mean, you remember I called in and I was asking about global warming and climate change, and it wasn't that. Like I said, I hated the way the argument's framed. Because, like I said, you know, I mean, it just, the argument is framed almost with everything going to, it's either fossil fuels or nothing. Like I said, if you remember when I told you, it was like you either love trees or you hate polar bears. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're, you know, and people forget that, you know, Bush put a moratorium, I remember hearing this on Malloy a while back, but Bush put a moratorium on solar panels on public lands till we could study their impact on the environment.
Like on butterflies going splat, sure, right.
so I mean, that's the way it's framed, but I mean, I sent you an article and I had to ask you about this, and I would love your listeners to weigh in on it and pass me, but somebody somebody, you know, hopefully with this climate change bill, I mean, can anything be done about international waters, like whether it's Maersk, the shipping line or whatever? Because one of the things, an article I had sent you, and it was supposedly the 16 largest super tanks put out more carbon emissions than all the cars in the world combined.
Yeah, I saw that, and I don't know. I mean, it's possible.
And that doesn't mean we need to quit driving our freaking cars, but it's like, hey, those 16 boats need to come off the goddamn water.
Or be refitted to run more cleanly. Sure, but look, the world's oceans, Lee, are out of sight, out of mind. You know, my God, we've got an area of the Pacific Ocean as large as the state of Alaska. That's nothing but garbage.
Oh no! We're talking about the same thing. Yes, that's why my parents don't know. It's two times the size of Texas.
Oh, well, isn't that Alaska?
Oh, okay. I forget. We're not used to admitting we're number two.
Yeah, it's like the old joke about the two Texas guys, the two Texas oil magnates talking right after Alaska was admitted to the Union.
Yeah.
And they're talking. I said, "Well, Alaska's the biggest state in the Union now. Ain't one thing we can do about it. Ain't but one thing." And his buddy looks at him and says, "What's that?" And he says, "Buy it."
Jesus. I should let you go on that last note. Of course, for a while here in the 80s, it was the how do you get an oil man's attention in Texas?
I don't know.
Waiter. And oh, by the way, did you not to go into GMO food porn? Did you get the thing I sent you today about the GeoPig?
Yes. Yes, that was alongside the remark about remembering my note to Malloy. What was that? Ode to a hog jowl?
Yes, sir. I just remember Mike, when he finished reading your email, went, oh. But then I like pho, you know, pho from the Vietnamese places, so, you know.
Yeah, well, actually, I think it's pho, but, you know, who am I?
I should ask Dad. He did three tours there.
Yeah, it's pho.
I will let you
but
go.
It's yummy. There's a little pho joint that I almost went there on Penn Avenue in Pittsburgh. Almost went there.
They're all over Austin. Oh, which speaking of, okay, I won't leave you just yet, because I'm about to write my first op-ed or whatever, letter to the editor, because I had pissed off so many people with my ranting about coal. Like I said, I lost a lot of my family and, you know, Christian acquaintances on Facebook or whatever. But did you, I've got to go back and look at it, but most of our power that comes from the Lafayette County Power Plant, which is bought from, I think it's Black Rock, Virginia. That's where the little three-year-old boy had the freaking boulder, the fly.
That was Appalachia, Virginia, Wise County.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's where you know, hey, this little blue oasis in the middle of red hell, Texas, gets most of their power.
But Lee, you're aware of it, okay? And aware, you know. You got to buy the ticket before you get to take the ride. And you've bought the ticket. You know, you're at least aware of what's going on. And if one person's aware, two can be. And if two can be, four can be. If four, eight. If eight, 16, 32. You know how it goes.
Well, Texas Betsy, who I've been real lucky to, you know, hang out with recently, she's the one that pointed out. She goes, "You don't live in Texas. You live in Austin." This is like, you know, this is like living in Berlin, I guess, during the Cold War. You know, it's still a Western city.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the truth. And if the GOP in Texas works every day trying to figure out how to infiltrate.
So the horn is my equivalent to the Austin area.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's Radio Free Austin. It's Radio Free everywhere. When you consider the right wing clampdown that. The glorious Republican Party has on traditional over-the-air, you know, so-called public airwaves. Jesus, how public is it, Lee, when you can't hear programming you want to hear?
Yeah, it's like that show Jericho, if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
All right, this is Skeet Ulrich saying goodbye, sir.
All right, later, Lee.
Have a great one.
Bye now. Calling from Austin, that's our buddy Lee, and we move on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, I'm trying to recover from this article from Shakira in '80. Sorry.
No, what? That's a,
Yeah, I know. She looks good with these two little black kids around her. Anyway, she's hot. I'm sorry.
Well, yes, she is. And hips don't lie.
But she's...
No fighting, Shakira, Shakira. You know.
Good Lord, I'm just thinking, who else who's not in Haiti? I mean, it's good, but, you know, it's I can't help but be a little bit cynical about it, you know, with these stars over there touching the black people. But anyway, it's cool. It's all good.
Yeah, it's, you almost got me. You almost got me. I had to pull the fader down real quick. Otherwise, there would have been an on-air snort.
Okay, well, listen. I hate to start off by clowning liberals, but because, you know, you're from the South, you know, and I'm a Negro. So let me tell you something. I was listening to David Sirota, and these freaks, he was talking to Christy Harvey, one of them other nice white people, and they're all talking about, oh, could it be really that the Tea Party are really racist? I'm like, dudes, hello?
No, they're still asking that question.
Yeah, no, give me a damn break. I was like, you know, people, you cannot be serious. They were seriously sort of coming to the realization and quite sad about it and sort of, oh, is it, you know what I mean? It was just, I was just so ill. I'm thinking, you fucking, this is the problem with these progressives who just chit-chat for a living, write articles, and, you know, feel good about their microbreweries and bagels. I don't know, but it was doing my head, and I'm like, you know what? What do you think it is?
Oh, Muffy, I just had the most wonderful IPA, triple hopped.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't
want to, and it's, you know, it's kind of nasty on my part, because, you know, people can just live their lives, but it's just like a parody, Bob. Hello. A goddamn parody.
I'm astonished that conversation still has any coin of the realm left in it. Of course they're racists. Of course they're bigots. That's, Jesus, they're formed out of the core of the John Birch Society.
Well, no, but it's just the sort of, you know, the kind of, I don't know, Tim Weiss just sort of popped in my mind when I was listening to this. I'm like, good night, you people. The white privilege was just oozing, and it was just making me feel sick, okay?
Yeah, and I know what you mean when you're talking, and that's, you know, that's a conversation that can never be had too often, is just to try to explain the concept of what white privilege is, because it doesn't mean that you get a motorboat on Sunday. It's so laden into the society. I mean, there are things that white folks don't even think about.
Well, no, but it's just, and I don't, you know, I'm a bit, you know, hesitant because I'm not dismissing whatever, because I like Sirota's writing, you know.
Yeah, I do too. He's done some great work.
He can be, you know, pretty pointed. But it's just that type of mentality with those particular uber successful liberals who still try to work to, you know, promote the common good. I don't even know if I'm making any sense. It's just doing my head in, because I'm like, you guys need to be doing other things. The Tea Party, it's on. Them people ain't playing. Okay?
No, they're not. And you know, I guess I could encapsulate maybe a little of where you're going with a little of what I'm thinking, Sandra, by just, you know, you want to look at him and say, you know, you guys need to get out a little bit.
And it's just, I don't know. It was just a whole sort of, ew, you know, it must be nice. It must be a nice life for you where you're sitting around being hesitant about calling a spade a goddamn spade. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm so over it. And it's like, what are you using your media for?
I mean, so what was the jumping off point for this, Sandra? Was it that little statistical survey that the New York Times published a few days ago? Was that it?
Yes, it was the way they feel about black people. And it's like, Whitey, this ain't news to me. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It's like, God damn, you wake the hell up. If you're going to talk about these issues, talk amongst yourself in your bedroom. Don't put it on air because you sound like an idiot. Okay.
And it kind of ties in back to what I said about Rush Limbaugh at the beginning of the show. You know, this guy thinks that 85 union miners from a completely different mine mean that there were union miners inside Upper Big Branch because they all look the same to him. And that's not even with regard to skin color. That's with regard to economic status. Bunch of damn hillbillies. Same.
Oh, yeah, no, it is. It's the same brush. Yeah, and I agree with you on that one. You can have the same conversation, and it's the same, and you can lump Rush in with them, some older types, as far as I'm concerned, because they're both in the media. Now, I understand, you know, Rush is by far more despicable, but these liberals, though, that's dangerous, too. I'm so over it.
And, you know, there's the Marty is pointing out something to me, Sandra. He says, you know, but you've got Sarah Palin telling these morons they're not the racists. You know what? If you show up at a rally and you have to explain to your knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful that they aren't racists, they probably are.
Well, you ain't seen that Lloyd Marcus, that African-American who's singing?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was Matt Osborne had him singing on the Huntsville trip.
Oh, Lord. I looked at that and I thought, I just thought, you know, the jigging ain't stopping, okay? The jigging is never gonna stop. Is he kidding?
I got you. I got you one though, and I'm this may get under your skin, Sandra. Did you see this one? Former GOP Congressman J.C. Watts, quote: "Social programs are the new slavery."
Take care of your kids, J.C. All 40 of them. Okay.
I mean, there is that.
Oh no, he's bankrupt. He needs to shut up and get back on late night cable TV, wherever the hell he been. Are you kidding me?
Let's see. Over the weekend, former Republican Congressman J.C. Watts gave a speech at the Southern Republican Leadership Conference.
that one in Louisiana?
Yeah, the one in New Orleans. And later he sat down for interviews and spoke to KARN News Radio's Dave Elswick. And that's where he said, Dave, I think that's a legitimate claim. If the programs aren't improving people's lives or getting them into a life of productivity, it's just like we could say, I think it's slavery to give your kids an allowance unless you say you got to take the trash out, you got to keep your room clean. Parents usually don't give their kids an allowance without saying you have to do something.
Okay, so social programs in the U.S. has been reduced to kids taking trash out? Good night. Oh, no. You know what? Lawn jockeys, jigging, house Negroes, all of it. Okay, I can't hear it. These people need to, I guess that's one way of getting paid. Okay, you know, my boy Michael Steele, he the head of that club, and he working it. More power to him. Put your money in the bank. Have a good time. But these other Negroes, stop! Enough.
but you know this.
J.C. Watts probably upset because Michael Steele and cashing in. Watts is on TV selling this, that, or another at 3 a.m.
Yeah, it's like, where's mine?
So he's trying to get him some.
But again, you know, it crosses lines, and you know the bigotry is getting thick. You know who Haley Barbour is, right?
Oh God damn it! You know what? Every time he opens his mouth, I just want to put an eye pick in my, you know, an ice pick in my eye. God, he's horrific.
Well, you know, in Mississippi, talk like it. I've got a mouth full of grits.
Oh, it's horrible. It's just something. I don't know if it must be in the DNA because I ain't never been to no Mississippi, but I just, as soon as I hear it, I'm like, oh, dear God.
But here's the fun part. They are, to a certain extent, turning on themselves because Grover Norquist has, on the news that Haley Barbour had sat down with a very close group of influential inside advisors to discuss whether he wants to run for president in 2012. Oh, do please, Haley. Do please.
Education today. Yeah, I got it. I
yeah,
hear
right.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to see him debate Obama. You know, I'll buy tickets.
God.
But, you know, he does. He's got that accent like he's talking with a mouthful of grits. And Grover Norquist was asked his opinion on it, Sandra. And Grover Norquist said this. This is a quote. This is a beautiful thing. Haley Barbour, because he's not completely fluent in English, was not quite the spokesman that you might have thought.
What? No, no, no. What?
Grover Norquist said Haley Barbour is not completely fluent in English.
Okay, listen. Hey, have fun eating your own. I like it.
That's good. You want some onions with that liver?
Oh my God! You know what? You know, the Republican Party is like something. It is so frightening right now. But we can't joke about it because it translates into what's going on in Arizona. Being brown is getting real damn difficult. You understand what I'm saying?
Your papers are not in order.
Papers, man. I was like, hello? I had to reread and reread, and I'm like, wow. So they're going to be, what's the criteria, Bob?
That's the thing. It's
brown.
Right. It's not clear, and yet it is entirely clear. This piece of legislation passed this past Tuesday makes it a violation of state law to be in the U.S. without proper documentation, grants police the power to stop and verify the immigration status of anyone they suspect of being illegal. Now, for instance, you know, the United States has, and I'm not complaining, has a lot of illegal Irish immigrants, right?
Mm.
So let's say one of them finds his way to Arizona. Now, that adorable little Lucky Charms Irish brogue is not going to get some employee of Sheriff Joe Arpaio to say, let me see your papers, son, because he's going to be all pink.
No, I mean, it's straight up, you know, it's a nice use of the state to attack people of color with no pretenses at all. And 11 other states are poised to do this BS. I blame the federal government, too. Get a damn workable immigration policy. I can't even believe this.
But who are the people howling for this? I guess better to put it this way, Sandra. What are the people who were howling for this sort of hateful, bigoted legislation? What are they doing now? Can I go ahead and answer my own question?
Yes.
They're going to teabag rallies.
Oh, dear God. Well, no, but it's in the media, how they're pumping this crap, it's out of control every day, every day, every day, every day. I mean, what's going on? Is this, I don't know. I'm really sort of, my mouth is dropped constantly in between looking at this stuff in the news and talking to these students that I teach. I'm like, beam me the hell up.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the thing, though. Where to?
Oh, listen, anyway, yeah, it's, the Tea Party thing is really out of control, and the it's sort of, what it is sort of these white people freaking out. God help us when they freak out, Bob. I mean, no offense, but Jesus.
Well, you know, you're on the same side of the script as what Bill Clinton was trying to explain to people earlier today.
Bubba?
Yeah, I kid you not.
What the hell was he saying? I'm in sync with that fool with.
He gave a speech at the Center for American Progress Action Fund earlier today, and he said, "We can't let the debate veer so far into hatred that we lose focus of our common humanity. It's really important. We can't ever fudge the fact that there's a basic line dividing criticism from violence or its advocacy, and that the closer you get to the line and the more responsibility you have to think about the echo chamber in which your words resonate." Went on at length, and basically said that this current trend in the country, this ugly, bigoted, racist bubbling up of the teabag movement, is, for all intents and purposes, an incitement to have another Oklahoma City. Now, I got no problem with that argument. In fact, it's an argument that, well, I've been making for years now.
Well, no, but to me, what I'm disturbed by is to sort of see what, you know, how... It's like a sort of collective mental breakdown that these white people are having, sort of spurred on by the election of Obama and economic insecurities. that combination has seen this, it seems to have sent them over the edge. But see, millions of frightening white people, see, that's not, I'm out. I can't do it. I'm scared of them at the best of times. When it's like this,
yeah, and that's the answer to the question, why do we spend so much time talking about the teabaggers?
Hey.
Because, you know what? Little, nasty, hate-filled minorities can completely change the shape of an entire nation state. It has been done before, and I won't even mention the nations where it happened so well, depending on how you view things, successfully or tragically.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And also, you scratch the surface and you see the ginormous corporate interests and rich people who are sort of backing this, and their agenda is, you know what their agenda is.
Yeah, preserve their wealth.
Right, and to make us more poor, you see? I mean, I don't know. I just am sort of just appalled at, you know, how stupid and how pliable.
And how cynical the motivating strategy is. Well, yes, you're poor, but you're poor for America. Huh? Because, you know, that's the argument. That's what is being fed to these brain-dead idiots. I found it very refreshing when we were in Pittsburgh this past week on Wednesday morning when Leo Girard, the president of the steelworkers, was speaking. And speaking to the, you know, to the session inside the hall. Yeah, we were broadcasting. And he said, these teabagger people, or whatever, and I was running in and out of the room and so forth, but I didn't hear him say, these teabagger people, or whatever you call them, I call them goddamned idiots. And I just, if it weren't for the fact that I would have been tasered before I got halfway there, I just wanted to run up and hug him. Because they are useful idiots. And I'm not saying that of them because that's my position. I'm saying that of them because that is how the other side is using them. I don't know if you saw this clip of Victoria Jackson playing her damned ukulele at one of these teabag rallies, but you remember Victoria Jackson, Saturday Night Live, all that crap.
Okay, so she was...
She's a teabagger, and she's going to all these rallies with a ukulele and that high-pitched dizzy blonde voice. And she's singing these little songs that she's made up. Let me see if I can get this thing to cue.
Oh, my Lord.
It's Nutsville. I'll have it in a second here. It's beyond my ability almost to describe. I saw her, you know, she was working her shtick in Huntsville on the video that Matt Osborne shot a couple of weeks ago and put a brilliant YouTube video up of it. And this stuff has to be documented, Sandra. It just has to be documented. Okay, here we go. Here's Victoria Jackson entertaining the troops at a teabag rally yesterday in D.C. You ready for this?
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. My husband really misses me. My parents think I've gone crazy. Only Glenn Beck understands me.
Hear the cheers? Don't you wish I'd been lying?
Oh, no, that's just... Listen. Oh, my God. It is so much more out of control than I even thought. What? Oh, wow. And see, because the media, the corporate media has latched on. This is what we're going to be subjected to here from here on out, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and what the little teabaggers showing up, you know, in Huntsville and Nashville and all across the Fruited Plain have been hearing for a month now.
You know, but
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, please, you.
Oh, don't tell me, though, that the black face that's now representing, you know, America as president isn't such a huge part of all this. And it's so disturbing that people are, like, trying to come up with everything but because of what? They don't want to acknowledge how effed up this country is, really.
Well, even Obama, with a little, you know, a little break away from his essential Vulcan nature, said, I guess yesterday, we cut taxes for 95% of working Americans, just like I promised we would on the campaign. So I've been a little amused over the last couple of days where people have been having these rallies about taxes. You'd think they would be saying thank you. That's what you'd think.
Stay white, Obama. Stay white. What the hell? What is he? I mean, he's sort of trying to stay neutral while
stay
black.
Golden pony boy.
No, trying to stay neutral while black is not really going to work. I don't care how much taxes he cuts. He can cut all the taxes.
If he was writing checks, he would still be the black guy without the birth certificate writing the checks.
Oh, it's just, yeah, it's stunning. Yeah, it's the, I mean, I understand how, I guess. No, actually, I don't understand what Obama's doing. At this point, he needs to just throw it all in and just come out like Dave Chappelle. Shit.
I'm Wayne Brady. Yeah, no.
You know, Black Bush. You ever seen that shit?
Yes.
Yeah, man, go that route. I don't mean, you know, I don't even understand what's going on. Because he's president, you know, I just think it must be a nightmare. I bet that fool is smoking. Damn, okay.
He's moved a cot out onto the back driveway.
Like,
just because he's lighting them off each other.
I mean, I know, I'm horrible. I know. I just sort of it's like watching a wreck. You know, you can't look away. You know.
And you know, you want to root for the guy, and I do. And it's really pitiful when you find yourself feeling sorry for the president of the United States.
That is pitiful. I understand what you're saying, though, but yeah, you have to sort of check yourself because that's, you know, it's the president of the United States, but I hear you. I just sort of...
You know, he's got some ideas. He'd like to see some things get done, this financial reform stuff. You know what? And again, I heard Leo Gerard say it on Wednesday. We got the health bill through. It's not the bill we wanted. It didn't have the stuff we wanted in it, but it's politically what we could get. And we got it. And they swore that they would, you know, they swore that they would run blood in the streets to keep us from getting it. But we got it. And there's a lesson to be learned from that. We can do things. And then it doesn't have to be watered down and lily-livered and wishy-washy. It can be the stuff that we need to fix this country because those dumb bastards are on the right wing, the teabaggers and the Victoria Jacksons, and they ain't coming with us. You know, it's like Reverbo keeps saying. He says, you know, we've got the bus. The bus is running, and we're going to leave without you.
Listen, speaking of Reverbo, you know, he popped in my mind because I saw that chinless freak, Mitch McConnell.
Yes.
Talking about how the reform is going to institute permanent bailouts. You know, these bastards are disgusting. They're just lying.
Yeah, right. You know, all we've got is these, you know, we got these little facts that we're devoted to, and we've got a few radio hosts on terrestrial radio, you know, heroes like Malloy, people like Hartman, people like, you know, the list, and those of us here on the internet, and you know, those dumb, the right wing bastards have 50,000 watt blowtorches by which they just make stuff up. It's like, yeah, McConnell with that lie, or then, of course, there's always, you know, batshit crazy Michelle Bachmann, who has now declared the federal government literally owns banks. There's only one problem, Sandra. The federal government literally doesn't.
Yeah, well, one could hope at this point. Oh, my God. No, they just straight up, they lie, and it's incredible. Did you happen to see that one article where... Surprise, surprise, 50% of American households don't pay income taxes. Have you noticed how they're spinning that? That it's like the rich are being put upon? Can you
right, them? Right. Because it's all us freeloading poor people that are dragging the country down.
Oh, no. Don't talk about the fact that people make so little they can't pay. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
That the wealth is so skewed in this country.
Do you know there was a rally? Sandra, there was a rally in which Latinos held up signs saying, Viva taxes. In other words, I want to be legal. I want to pay taxes. I want to participate in the American economy. And you know what? You know what that weirdo right-wing freak Steve King from Iowa said about it? Oh, man, how do they come up with this? They won't be real Americans if they love taxes. Of course, later that day, he also went to a teabagging rally.
Well, no, but see, this is, how do they think a society or a nation is held together? I mean, what do they think? I just don't, I'm so exasperated by their inability to even rationally understand how the state operates. You know, what do they think would happen if there's no more taxes, for example?
You know what? Then it would just be the anarchist wonderland that they yearn for. Then we could see all of Ayn Rand's theories brought to full blooming fruition, and America would be a libertarian wonderland where each person would be paid upon the merit of their worth. Except they wouldn't.
That's Colorado Springs, is it not?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, anyway, listen, I'll let you go, but I must bring up that serial rapist quarterback. What the fuck?
You know what? I was in Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh is on its ear over Ben Roethlisberger.
No, did you see the report of that girl? Oh,
yeah.
No, you got to be out of your damn mind. He is disgusting. I'm just like, where's the suspension? Where's the chit chat from the whitest man in the world, Roger Goodell? What's up, Roger?
Well, it was really uncomfortable yesterday because the Steelers management sort of had a press conference because they kind of just couldn't issue press releases anymore. And they made these noises like they're really, really unhappy with him. And, if the Steelers could get it, the one thing they would love better than anything else would be to get St. Louis's first-round draft pick and send Ben Roethlisberger packing to St. Louis.
Well, they got rid of the other...
Santonio Holmes. Yeah, he got an apple and a roadmap in a hurry.
Yeah, they got rid of... I mean, no, but what I'm saying, though, is that this freak, and I don't care if he wasn't charged, he has, it's like one, two, three different stories, you know, what is this getting young women so drunk and forcing yourself on them? And how disgusting is this?
My God, you're a multimillionaire quarterback with a Super Bowl ring. If you can't get her without getting her loaded, there's something bad wrong with you.
No, it's bad. No, that speaks to some sort of misogynistic, I don't know.
Yeah, power trip. It's
the rate. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Well, I was talking to this guy who shall remain nameless, who is from Ohio, and he was telling me that nobody there is surprised that Ben Roethlisberger is behaving this way because he was nothing but trouble he's been trouble since the day he was born, and that he's just that kind of guy.
No, I mean, the first time, the second, as soon as I'm like, no, this dude is off because they have it thrown at him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Say what you want about Tiger. At least none of them people are accusing him of that.
Right. And I was about to say, it's that Jerry Clower thing. You know, Tiger's getting some relief.
You know, I know. I just am like, I don't think much of him. You know that. But let's be real. This man is out of control. And what? They're going to suspend him for two games, and then his big ass is going to be throwing footballs again? Wow.
I get the sense from just reading the coverage that there are a lot of people saying, why couldn't they have just charged him so we would have had grounds to do something about him?
Oh, no, because it's too much.
But it goes back. There's a serial pathology beyond the sexuality stuff here, Sandra. Apparently, Terry Bradshaw's unloaded on him.
Yeah, he don't got time for him.
Because way back before, remember when he had his motorcycle accident, Ben did? Before that happened, apparently Terry had gone to him and said, son, you're a Steeler now. And that means something.
Mm.
Means something to this town. And you need to park the bike until you're retired. And Ben didn't have any time for that, you know.
Mm.
And then, you know, cracked his skull, and then this stuff goes, and apparently, I didn't see it, but Bradshaw has apparently unloaded both barrels loaded with nothing but rock salt at him.
I wasn't even thinking too much of it until I, you know, read the report from the girl, her friends, and everybody else. It's like, hello, the friends are like trying to get into the door. I mean, the whole scene just sounded so sleazy, and these cops that were, moonlighting. You know, what is this?
I think it's an expose on just how corrupt the sports culture is, frankly.
I realize that, you know, my outrage is more sort of, it's just so disgusting to me, just the whole mentality, you know. It's like, come on, yo, what's that, you know? That's jail behavior as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it is. And
in Georgia, they lock up people if you sneeze.
Right, well, and look, I don't think it's an unfair question to say, you know, what if Ben Roethlisberger's skin, what if that had been Donovan McNabb?
Oh, you know what? Exactly. But Donovan McNabb is too damn, you know, no, it wouldn't happen. You see what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, though, like Dave Zirin said, they don't got a mic in Brady's face or Peyton's face asking them about the culture of, you know, trucks and, you know what I'm saying? Like they were asking every other black player about dogfighting. You got that?
Yeah.
And I'm like, where's the questions to all the other white quarterbacks? And you know what I mean? And it's just the whole NFL, I understand what kind of sport it is, but I'm wondering if I should take a rain check on it now.
I think you should. What I think doesn't matter. But I personally think what the NFL does with this will say a lot about where the NFL is. I mean, you know, Plaxico Burress's ass is in prison.
Yeah, for shooting him damn self. Exactly.
Yeah, shot himself.
And it's just sort of like, you know, they want to make an example of him. I'm like, okay, what about this fool right here? Okay, you can say, oh, he wasn't charged with anything. But I'm sorry. Roger Goodell is trying to. Women are the fastest growing consumers of football. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Now, what do you think women are thinking about this serial rapist that watch your product? That's my question.
And the fact of the matter is, he's only going to keep taking. He's only going to keep taking the Steelers down. See, I see the Steelers and the Packers in very much the same light. Those, the Rams could be in L.A. or St. Louis or, you know, wherever. You know, it blew me away today when I found out that there's an Oklahoma City professional NBA franchise. Who knew? I didn't. But, you know, teams can come and teams can go.
Mm-hmm.
But the Steelers and the Packers are intimately associated with their communities. And that's because those two communities in and of themselves have a profound sense of community.
Yeah, those are anchor. They're anchor teams. Exactly. No, I know what you're saying.
And the thing is, it means something to be a part of that franchise. You know, it used to be that way. It used to be that way with the Yankees. You know, nobody could imagine Joe DiMaggio in an Indians uniform because it just would have been wrong. But this does real damage to that. And the sense that I got just listening to sports radio in Pittsburgh, talking to bus drivers and cabbies and guys working, because it, like that convention center where we were, everybody moving equipment, everybody working there, everybody manning a cash register, serving a hot dog, had an opinion about Ben Roethlisberger, and I'd say it was about 9.5 to 1, get him out of here. We don't want him.
Apparent that he shouldn't be the face for that community's pride and joy, right?
Obvious.
You know, and it's just sort of, Yeah, I'm just interested to see where it goes because, you know, I just thought the reports were just despicable. I'm like, good Jesus.
Well, you know, this two-game suspension, screw that. You know, I think the head coach could come out and say, well, look, you know, I don't know if we're going to trade him or what, but I can tell you this, he ain't the starting quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers anymore.
They better try to make a run for Sam Bradford and call it a day.
That breakable thing? Oh, no.
You're not a fan?
I'm not, no. I mean, him and Colt McCoy, they both break if you look at them hard.
Oh, God, that Colt McCoy when he was crying, I'll never get over that. Ah.
Well, you know, when he got flung around by Ndamukong Suh like a rag doll with his sawdust cut. But, no. There's other people out there.
Oh, boy. Well, anyway, I mean, you know, I understand that the sports is like, but to me, it's such a mirror to society in America. That's why I always gravitate towards it.
Well, it is.
You know?
It is. I mean, yes, it's bread and circuses, but guess who wants the bread and circuses? Working folks.
Yeah.
And, you know, if liberals can't talk this language, we can sit around with our, going back to your earlier analogy, we can sit around with our microbrews all day long, and it don't matter.
Oh, God.
I went to the figure skating championships last night, and it was marvelous. See, that ain't gonna work.
Well, and listen, I am not about to embrace some sort of anti-intellectual, obviously not, but come on, we got to find a middle ground. That IPA, that whole, it's wrong.
You know what? I go to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I drink Iron City beer.
You know?
I won't drink it anywhere else on planet Earth, but by God, I have a moral responsibility to drink it in Pittsburgh.
Well, no, I mean, I have no problems being pretentious. It's quite amusing sometimes. But at least I know. When the hell I am being.
Yeah, you know, when you're in on the gig. And by the way, before you do go, I got to let you know you engendered an email. Kevin writing from Jacksonville Beach, he says, I always enjoy Sander, and I'm not a big Sirota fan, but I have to defend him. He experienced a death threat in September of 2009 after talking about racism and teabaggers and sent along the article that he wrote about it. And you know, it's true. And after you've had that, that stuff will scare you. I mean, but the sad thing is, there's a reason to be afraid. Who was the guy in Denver 10, 15, 20 years ago that the skinheads gunned down in the parking lot?
Right, yeah.
What was his name? Alan Berg?
Alan, yes, that's right.
And you know what? The other side does that. I mean, I remember one night, you know, here in Beckley. I'd been on the air and I'd been delivering, double-barreled hell to the right wing for 3 hours, and I got out and I was shadowed home, and you know I had a gun, in the car, and by God, I popped it out of the glove box, put the clip in, took the safety off, and racked one into the chamber.
Well, I mean that's what Malloy's always going on about too. I guess he's experienced similar thing.
Because they operate like that. Nobody, you know, nobody sends death threats to Rush Limbaugh. We don't do that, but they do. And so, yeah, just food for thought. But Sandra, this has been a wonderful conversation. I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a good show.
All right, take care. Bye now. And I'm going to take a wee small break real quick just because it's a little dry. Hey, it's it's Friday on the front porch. Take a little break and come back after I've wet my whistle, so to speak. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn. No, that's the wrong song. Let's try this. No, that's the wrong song, too. Maybe we won't take a break after all. Here we go. Yeah, that's what I wanted. This goes out to all those right-wing liars. This is the horn.
I lie. Why? Because I can. It's the pleasure and the privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? I don't give a damn for you. I don't give a damn for you. That's the truth. I lie because I can. It's not stealing if it's legal. Let's just change the rules. Besides, it's middle management's fault. If they can't cook my books right, they're fired, they're fools. Let them be the ones who get caught. Taxes are for losers. I'm a winner, you see. Money is the magic stuff that set me free. And I lie. Why? Because I can. It's the pleasure and the privilege of the richest people in the land. Don't you understand? Don't give a damn for you. Don't give a damn. That's the truth. I lie because I can. Because I can. I lie because I can.
Some Friday on the Front Porch music, if there ever was. That is, of course, Will Kimbrough from the Americanitis LP, disc, digital recording, whatever we happen to be calling them now. I love it. That's I Lie. And it's true. They get behind the microphone or in front of their camera lenses or whatever and just make crap up. You and I, we have a passing familiarity with a passion for facts and honesty. They don't. That's why the right wing is largely made up by people who are textbook qualifiable psychopaths and sociopaths. Because to a sociopath, the truth, and understanding that truth is fluid. You know, ask a right-wing fundamentalist what's truth. Well, you know, the earth was made in 7 days, and Adam and Eve rode to church on a dinosaur. That's a belief truth. That's not a fact truth. And we're all hung up on facts and truth. They ain't. And they're not about to smarten up a chump because they really, really do understand that their audience, not us, their audience are chumps. Their audience buys vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls. Their audience orders Swedish mattresses. Their audience buys male enhancement herbal remedies and sits there and takes the pills and prays, I tell you, prays for the erection lasting longer than 4 hours, I swear. And by the way, Marty updating me, and I need this because I'm not an NBA guy. He says, FYI, the Oklahoma Thunder NBA franchise just moved there this year from Seattle. You mean those were the Supersonics? Son of a... Can you imagine being... I don't care how bad the team was. Seattle's a great place to be. If you're going to be playing for a terrible basketball franchise, it might as well be terrible somewhere that's nice. Can you imagine getting the memo? Well, guys... we're sucking in Seattle, so we're going to go suck in Oklahoma City instead. Why? Trade me! Trade me! You remember Tommy Lee Jones in the first Men in Black movie standing in front of the in front of the great big giant bug screaming, "Eat me! Eat me!" That's what it was like the day they found out they were moving to Oklahoma City. Trade me! Trade me! I ain't going to Oklahoma City and you can't make me. Hell, the only redeeming thing that Oklahoma's got going for it is Bart Cop, and even he calls it K-Drag. Used to be the Supersonics. That's like the world shifting on its axis or something. The Supersonics have been there forever. And now they're the Oklahoma Thunder? The Thunder? Not the Oklahoma Tornadoes? Or the Oklahoma parched, drought-stricken land? No, the Thunder. Jeebus. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, maybe he was sitting there. They were sitting up. They were sitting up at RCL going, "Put the red card in my locker, please. Put the red card."
Yeah, please, Mr. Custer. I don't want to go.
I know. Let's see. What are we going tonight? Oh, well, you were talking about the baby Jesus. My take on it was it just he got in trouble because he didn't get Fox their cut?
Well, you know, yeah, maybe they didn't get their vig.
Yeah, that's what I got thinking about. I'm sitting there going, "You're worried about them." I wrote the thing. I said, "We don't need no stinking ethics at Fox Noise."
Well, what I loved was the story I read about it, Luke, that said. Had some guy who was all about journalism ethics was in, and he said, you know, there's no way that I've studied journalism ethics for 40 years now, and there's no way that this can pass a journalistic ethics. And it keeps journalism ethics. Right. I'm like, wait, stop. In what universe do you think that Sean Hannity is a journalist?
Well, you know what the other one's going on this week at Fox, at Faux Noise? Is this thing with Bill O'Reilly, where no one here has ever said that anybody was going to go to jail. Then Media Matters trots out like about 8 clips in a row where different people doing it. And the last one is Glenn Beck saying it while he's being interviewed by guess who? The big giant head himself. And O'Reilly's going, "We had our crack research team look into it. They can't find any examples of anybody saying that you'd go to jail if you didn't sign up for Obamacare." And it's like, here you are doing this, and it's like, you know, you're just sitting there going, "You know, will somebody else please mention this just for the fun of it?" I mean, we know that the people over at CNN are all trying to chip in together by one spine, but, you know, it's one of those things. I was sitting there watching, had the John King show on, and it's like I said, if the man had a spine, we could declare a miracle. I'm sitting there watching some of this stuff, and it's like, you know, when you're sitting here going after talking about the Tea Partiers, and you're just sitting there going, "John, ask them where they were in 2007 and 2008. If this was such a great thing about all physical responsibility, where were you? You know, W has a $3 trillion budget. Where were you?" Isn't it amazing? But once we elect that man,
and you know, the ultimate irony of the teabaggers was sort of brought out in bold display yesterday. You know, of course, that President Obama went down to Florida, down to Cape Canaveral, to talk to him about the space program, right? Yep. You saw that.
Yep.
Well, what they did, the baggers, honest to God, teabaggers. You know, the less government spending teabaggers?
Mm-hmm.
They lined the roads to Cape Canaveral, even though Barack Obama was landing Air Force One on a runway there. But, you know, they're not real bright, these baggers. But anyway, with signs saying "Save our space program," you know, the space program that's funded by come on government spending.
No, I didn't work out some. No, they sell Tang. That's how they make their money. Yeah,
how did you right? What, astronauts to the moon. What part of irony do these idiots not get?
Most of it, you know. Oh, before I forget, I saw something. They were ran up the thing. It's the first time I'd seen it. Tomorrow night and Sunday night, CNN's running one of their investigates hours, you know, so they don't have to do news for an hour. They're going to do it on Joe Sestak and why about him hitting the building in Texas, the IRS building. What do you bet? Nowhere in there will they mention the fact that the main reason this guy was ticked off was the fact that he tried to have his business declared a religion so he could get out of paying taxes. But that was his great injustice, you know, that he was ticked at the IRS for, was because of the fact they wouldn't let him declare his business a church or
right,
a house.
Right. They wouldn't let him run a Dodge.
Yeah.
And the thing is, he was running it off the Universal Life Church.
Oh. Was that the one where you send in the 1995 and five box tops?
I think, yeah. And now you don't even have to send in the 1995 or the box tops. You can just do it online. I think I'm Reverend Bob Kincaid with them.
But you want me to?
But I don't try. I don't try to declare the horn as a religion.
But you want me? It's one of those things where, you know, I want to see him when they mention the fact that, oh, by the way, this guy is a part owner in the airplane hangar out where he kept his airplane.
Yes, he was.
This guy was living in a cardboard box. I mean, every time you hear him, that's the way they want to describe it. Like, oh, he was just one step away from being on the street. No, he wasn't. I mean, this is just one of them ones that somebody opened up his head, stirred it around, and he, for some strange reason, that's the thought that came to the top. It's like, no! But, and you're just sitting here watching this thing, I was watching last John King, and CNN's new thing is we're going to get the people who are the most bland we can find.
Unless they are incendiary wingnuts like Eric Erickson.
Well, and the thing about him is I'm sitting there going, he was the one that was sitting there, and they were comparing a week or so ago, comparing the Hutteri to the Code Pink trying to symbolically arrest Karl Rove. The Hutteri's plan, and if the FBI had not stopped it, were less than a month away from killing cops, and then killing cops when they showed up for the funerals. But that's the same thing as Code Pink wanting to do essentially a ceremonial arrest of Karl Rove.
And frankly, I got to say that that Code Pink plan is a little disturbing to me.
Oh, I know.
And it's not because I don't respect them. It's because the minute that they touch Carl with a handcuff, they're going to be federally chargeable for false imprisonment and kidnapping.
I mean, but you know what I mean? It's sitting there and trying to say these are the exact same things. It's like, what? Gee, is Code Pink stockpiling weaponry? Are they studying how to make IEDs?
That would be no. They just don't understand the law, that's all.
I know, but you know what I mean? And CNN is sitting there essentially doing this, sitting there going that. So instead, you know what we're going to get, though, for the next 2 weeks, don't you, on CNN, or more probably on the headline, but on CNN, too? The Larry King saga. Larry's decided to trade in another wife.
Oh, yeah, this is seventh marriage, eighth divorce. Is that how it works out?
And the funny part is, apparently this one, he don't have a prenup.
And of course, it's an accusation of him banging his wife's sister.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, this is...
And I'm the hillbilly?
Well, I was going to say, you think of this is headline news for the next 6 weeks, at a minimum. I mean,
Yeah, and Tiger's laughing again. Getting some relief.
Well, at least one thing, at least Tiger isn't out there telling people how to live and run their lives. I mean, he's sitting there trying to sell you stuff, okay. But, he's coming on every night wanting to talk to you. Here you are sitting here with Larry coming on every night talking to people. It's like, it's like I said, it's about time. If Ted were still in charge, I'm just wondering if Ted would be at the point now. It's like, Larry, it's time to go to the old broadcaster's home.
Well, Ted is still alive. He just doesn't have any control over.
I know.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. If Ted were still in control, would this be getting to the point where Ted would go, no more?
Yeah, it's time. Just step on the little hand truck there, Larry. We're going to wheel you back to the animatronic hall at Disney World for some repairs, and then you can just stand there and introduce people to the Hall of Presidents.
Yeah, you can sit there and interview each one of the presidents one at a time. You got 50. You got 44 of them to play with. Have fun. But, it is one of those things, sit here watching some of these news departments where it's like they're trying to tell you something without telling you anything. You know what I mean? It's like when you sit here in about 15, 20 minutes, I'll turn over and watch Washington Week in Review. And usually there'll be some major story in town, and they won't cover it. They'll cover everything but, they'll have four people on, each one of them does a story, and none of them will be the story that's the main story that week. Unless it's just dumb luck and it's already over. But it's like this thing, with the teabaggers. Who up there, are we going to see anybody talk about Sean Handjob? Some different names we can put to that. But the baby Jesus, we'll just go with that.
The life support system for a hairdo.
I know. Just remember, like you said, ethics. Just remember, this is the same Sean Hannity to this day who's never offered any kind of public apology to some fellow named Michael Schiavo.
Yeah, and let's see, he's failed to allow himself to be waterboarded, even though he swore that he would be. And he's run a huge fraud ring that proclaims to take care of the veterans of wounded warriors.
Ed loves to go after people running what he calls fraudulent charities, but we haven't seen him say one word about the baby Jesus.
Nor will you.
No. But tonight, Mr. Maher is back live again after their little interview show last week. And I saw he's been renewed. But HBO signed him now for, I think, at least the next year. So he's been renewed to keep doing his show.
Isn't that an old country hymn, I've been renewed? Or
just remember, it's like you say sometimes about the preachers. They tell you to put your hand on the TV, but make sure you ain't standing in the water when you do it. You know?
Yep, one hand on the TV and one on your wallet.
And when you smell something burning, better check which hand, make sure which one's which. Something simmering around here, and unfortunately, it's me. But, our moment of geekiness.
Yes.
3 weeks till Iron Man 2.
Yeah, that's looking intriguing.
I know. Some of the commercials are real, the stuff's looking good. Oh, one thing on sports you were talking a minute ago. Now, I'll go to a different part. I'll go to baseball. Is it just me, or is ESPN's coverage sometimes of Albert Pujols just coming, just a shy to, you say sort of a moment or two shy of masturbatorial?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there watching it, and it's like they sit there and do a story on him for 20 minutes of their baseball show. And you know what? You're not a week into the game, into the series, the season. I'm sitting there going, you know, Albert's a great player. He's going to be known as one of the great players, but they are acting like he discovered baseball. That before him there was no baseball. And, you know, and sometimes with this stuff, it's like, guys, do you all have some sort of a contract with him?
Yeah, I was severely bummed out that the convention in the AFL-CIO convention in Pittsburgh didn't run through tomorrow because, frankly, the Bucks were coming back for a homestand tonight. And I really, that's one of the most beautiful ballparks in the entire United States. And you can get cheap seats for like $6.
Well, of course, as most people don't know down here in the South, you can watch a Braves game on about every other channel.
Yeah, but that's the sad. I grew up with that, and I don't have that anymore.
I've lived through the Dale Murphy years. Oh yes, indeedy.
Oh, but, hey, I go all the way back to who was it? Andy Messerschmidt.
Oh God.
When he had the word, his number was 17, and Ted Turner replaced his name on the back of his jersey with the word channel.
Yes, here we are at TBS.
Was that
3 in the morning?
No, who was that? I don't know why I said Andy Messerschmidt.
I'll get an
email in a minute.
I know. But first I was just going to tell you that this weekend they're playing the Rockies. So this could be fun. But, no, it's one of those things where, like you say, I'm sure somebody's probably done it. I would like to read a really good book on Turner and how the way he went from TBS to CNN and all that. Cause some of the stories out of TBS are just hilarious. I mean, if you go talk to, Bill Tush.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the things I used to have him do were just hilarious. Like I said, I still remember him and the German Shepherd doing the dog, doing the news at 3 a.m. You know, when he had to have 30 minutes of news on, so he would put Bill Tush on the air at 3 a.m. or 3:30, whenever, you know, the last movie ran out, and do his required newscast, where he would sit there and essentially read the AP wire. Or the UPI at the time, or whatever it was. And I'd get sometimes to watch those, and those were just hilarious as hell. Oh. Cause it was almost like Comedy Central, because they had no rules. As long as they did their half hour of news.
Oh, and it was Andy Messerschmidt, I was right.
Okay. But like you say, I mean, cause TBS was an adventure.
Oh, it was glorious in its early, In a way, as we sit and we talk about what media has done to our ability to have a functioning and viable democracy, or republic, or whatever it is the right-wingers insist that we call it these days, Ted Turner birthed it all.
You know, it's one of those things you just sit there and just...
And he did it with a little... He did it with a little
machine to go back about 10 years and say, no, Ted, not the AOL war time. No.
But he had no choice in it.
I know. Well, see, you know, and the thing that most people don't know, if I'm not mistaken, he said this one time, he was at one time a month away. If Murdoch had not gotten his finances in order, he could have bought out Sky News and Fox before it was Fox.
Yeah.
That once or twice Murdoch got in real financial trouble, and Turner almost thought about buying him out just to get rid of him.
how I wish he had. But it, no, all of that's, you know, it all begins with a little teeny tiny UHF station.
Well,
there was WTCG. That becomes WTBS. That becomes the superstation. There in the late 70s, CNN is born, and everybody said he was insane. Who's going to watch a 24-hour-a-day news channel?
Well, what was it before that? It was an advertising company. What, a sign company?
Well, Turner Communications. That's why WTCG was Turner Communications Group.
Yeah, but I mean that's where his dad had made his money. His dad had done like signs.
Right, yeah, billboards.
Billboards and that like that. And that's where that came from originally. But I tell you what, you know, some of this stuff, I'm just waiting to see who the Sunday stuff is, so we can see people that we don't want to see and all this stuff. It's like, you know, when we were talking about John King, I said, you know, I would really love, I would love to challenge the Sunday morning shows. Let's do an under 35 show. Everybody you have on has to be under 35 for a weekend. Let's see if you can stand it. You know what I mean? It's one of these things. It's like, was it? Jake Tapper, you know, he's on his farewell tour as the host of this week, and he was asking, you know, for what things to do. That's one day, Jake. Why don't you have everybody on there be under 35? And let's have some real talk. Let's see what happens when you have people on. Some people may actually want to see. I mean, you're sitting there and you've got George Will and Cokie and Sam, and you're sitting there looking around to see if any of them's got a pulse. Oh, the other one. Earlier tonight, before John King came on, I was flipping channels and turned on Big Eddie to see what Big Eddie was talking about. And he was showing a thing about O'Reilly. And O'Reilly was doing a split screen with Dennis Miller, and he said, damn, nobody told me Beavis and Butthead were back on the air.
You know where that joke came from?
Mm.
That was a lifted joke from John Stewart a few nights back.
But it is good. Got to give it credit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's one of those things we were talking about. Somebody was talking about one time. We were talking about, you know, would you go on Fox News? I said, yeah, just so I could grab Bernie's tie, just sit there and beat him on the desk till somebody stops me. His head and all. Say, hi there, I'm from Knoxville. Guess why I don't like you?
Oh, indeed, indeed.
All right, but I'm going to let you go on because you got other people to talk to.
All right, Luke, you have yourself a great weekend.
Bye, bud.
All right, you take care. Bye now.
Bye.
And we'll just keep things rolling. Or not. Okay. So, backing up just a moment, I said that I wanted to roll some of this audio of former President Clinton talking to the Think Progress people earlier today. And this is the answer to why do we talk about teabaggers. And I think it's valid. I think it's absolutely valid.
But it exploded in my first term, and it's continued to explode ever since. And among those who first saw its potential and made use of it were those who used the Internet to do all kinds of interesting things, including share information on how to make bombs. We didn't have blog sites back then, so the instrument of carrying this forward were basically the White Ring radio talk show hosts. And they understood clearly that emotion was more powerful than reason most of the time, and it happened that they got much bigger listenership and more advertisers and more commercial success if they kept people in the white heat.
Now, hold on for a minute, and this is not a criticism of Mr. Clinton. Right-wing hate radio people did do exactly what he just described. But ask the question, where were the liberal talkers? Answer, I don't know of many of them. The only name that I can come up with that was actually broadcasting at the time that Bill Clinton is talking about there is Mike Malloy. For those of you who don't know, Mike is literally the godfather of whatever can be described as liberal talk in this country. You know, he's been at it since, what, 86, 1986? Starting in Atlanta, you know, and going through WSB in Chicago and Lord knows what's... What was that outfit that was run by the auto workers? can't come up with it. But the short answer is the right-wing talkers were doing all this talking because there were very few in the way of left or liberal on the radio. And the question has to be answered, or the question has to be asked and answered, why is that? Well, it's not because left-wing or liberal, left-wing, please, there's no... But liberal radio talk was not seen as something that the left or the liberals or the Democrats or whatever we're going to call ourselves felt like they needed to be doing. And in any argument where only one side of the argument is presented, it doesn't matter if it's an argument that Easter bunnies lay chocolate eggs. You know what? That idea will take shape and will become the dominant idea simply by virtue of the fact that there is no counter to the argument being offered. And what Bill Clinton is talking about back in 1992 or 1994 or 1996, Jesus Christ, that's 18, 16, 14 years ago. We've learned, some of us, obviously you have, that we have to counter it. I know it, and you know it. You dig deep every month to make sure we get to continue what we're doing. I get in behind the microphone, hell or high water. My grandson is being born tonight, and I'm behind the microphone. Because this is what I do. This is my reality. This is something that has to happen. When there are 1,000 hours of right-wing hate for every hour of liberal talk on the air, I can't afford to give up a single hour of it if it's possible for me not to. And the question hangs in the air. Why are we still where we are? Why are we still very nearly at the same place we were in 1996 when now we've figured out that we have to be countering this stuff? Why? Who doesn't get it? Who doesn't understand that the remedy to hate speech is not to ban the hate speech, as Justice Learned Hand wrote over 100 years ago or so, the remedy, or maybe not 100, yeah, who knows, that, sue me. A long time ago, Justice Learned Hand wrote, the remedy to bad speech is not to quell the bad speech. The remedy to the bad speech is more speech. What part of more speech does do liberals, progressives, Democrats, whatever, what part of more speech do we not understand? President Clinton is making a good historical case for what the tenor of the times were and what the tenor of the times are. But what is the remedy? Friends and neighbors, brothers and sisters, I'm here to tell you, it's not to sit around and sing Kumbaya. It is to counter the bad speech with more speech. And at 1,000 hours to 1, That's an uphill climb that's straight vertical. But if we don't start driving the pitons into the rocks and going up a little bit at a time, they're going to start. Well, they're not going to start. They already are. They're up there and they're throwing down buckets of shit at you and me. Look at what, my God, 29. Dead human beings in a gassy hole in West Virginia, and a $40 million addict gets behind a microphone and blames it on a union that wasn't even allowed to be there. When are we going to figure it? Okay, that's what the reality is. How do we counter it? I love blogging. I love the internet. I'm on the internet. But we're not going to counter it by tweeting. And we're not going to counter it by Facebooking. This is how we're going to counter it. We're going to counter it by building our own infrastructure, a little liberal C-SPAN, if you will, which is exactly what the Horn did this week in Pittsburgh. It's amazing what we can do. We could do so much more if the people who have the ability to simply provide the infrastructure would figure out that they've got to be part of this process. Back to President Clinton.
For 99% of them, it was just that. Turn on the radio, listen to somebody, say something you agree with, vent your anger, go on with your life and make the best of it. But there, it shaped the environment in which we were in. But when you get mad, sometimes you wind up producing exactly the reverse result of what you say you are for. Think about your own life. Forget about politics. Every time you made an important decision in some non-political, totally personal way, when you were angry or frustrated or afraid, there's about a 75% chance you made a mistake. Isn't that right? You know, and the older you get, the more you'll see that. It's about, doing things when you are mad is by and large a prescription for error. So the only thing I'm saying is, have at it. Go fight. Go do whatever you want. You don't have to be nice, and you can be harsh, but you've got to be very careful not to advocate violence or cross the line. Yes, the Boston Tea Party involved the seizure of tea and a ship because it was taxation without representation. Because even the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which had been largely self-governing, had it stripped from them. This fight is about taxation by duly, honestly elected representatives that you don't happen to agree with, that you can vote out at the next election.
Okay, hold on a minute. President Clinton, for all the historical accuracy of what he has just said, has gone off into the weeds. He's off in the weeds. Because the other side isn't interested in history. You know, the other side isn't interested in factual truth. The other side is motivated in this particular instance. See, they hated Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton was a Democrat. And there was a pre-existing Rush Limbaugh-driven infrastructure, Newt Gingrich-driven infrastructure that said liberals are evil. And you know what? Ronald Reagan, may he roast in hell, was a big part of that. He was a godfather of it. But it's so much more. It's the Powell memo, and it's Richard Viguerie, and it's Kevin Phillips, and it's Lee Atwater and the Southern Strategy, and Richard Nixon, all working a theme for an entire American generation that said liberals are evil. Liberals are weak. And again, there's no truth in their assertion. There is no factuality in their assertion. It is factually incorrect. At the times that this country had liberal governance, the best things that have ever happened in this country happened. Republicans hated Bill Clinton for being a Democrat and winning the presidency. What Bill Clinton had to contend with back then, I would submit to you, has been pressed down and shaken together, and it is a thousandfold worse for Barack Obama, because they hate Barack Obama because he is a Democrat, because he won the presidency, and with the ultimate added source of hate, the one thing that has poisoned this nation for virtually its entire existence, they hate him because of the color of his skin. And I don't care how many times they say that they don't, their actions prove it more loudly than their words can ever speak. So to sit and talk about these good-for-nothing teabaggers as if, that, well, you know, they're unhappy with their elected representative. No, they are madder than hell because there is a Negro in the White House. Their White House. Wouldn't have called it a White House if we didn't want, if we ever wanted somebody who wasn't white living in it. Now, that may seem inflammatory, but I don't intend it that way. God Almighty, it's a fact. It is what motivates these morons and these freaks and these ignorant, knuckle-dragging, racist bigots. It is their reality. That meeting of close personal associates that was called together by Haley Barbour this week, where he toyed with the idea of running for president. Now, why in God's name do you think Haley Barbour would think he has a chance to be president? It's not because he's smarter than Barack Obama. It's not because he's got better ideas than Barack Obama. It's because he's got that gooey-ass southern accent, and he is everything that Barack Obama isn't, leading among which is the fact that he is white, white, white. You see, that's the motive, that's the real philosophical debate taking place inside the Republican Party even as we speak. I'm afraid we're going to have to run us a brown person just to whoop him. So we need to find us a brown person we can control. How about that Piyush Jindal down there in Louisiana? Maybe we run him as a vice president. At least she's a woman. We could run Sarah Palin. She's dumber than a handful of hammers, but she could be controlled. That's how they think. That's how they operate. That's how they strategize. So back to President Clinton for just a minute or two.
And 2 years after that, and 2 years after that, and 2 years after that. That's very different. We can't let the debate veer so far into hatred that we lose focus of our common humanity. It's really...
Pretty words. Our common humanity. But you see, the teabaggers don't think that Barack Obama is fully human. Because they are racists. And they use phrases, code words like mud people. Okay? I mean, if I have to, I'll go and I'll find the thing where the guy talks about, where the white supremacist talks about the mud people, just to prove it. This one I'll ask you to take me at my word on. They talk like that. When they're not just out there saying the word, the N-word, they talk about mud people. And to them, Barack Obama is mud people. While I was in Pittsburgh, I saw a story come out about the teabagger who's going to run for governor of New York. Did you hear about this? This bigoted asshat has a history of sending around photographs, you know the kind, that make racist fun of our current president. I saw one of the photographs that this bagger sent around. And it showed, there was a Photoshop job of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's heads on some other bodies walking down a runway, him dressed as a pimp and Michelle dressed as his hoe. This is our reality. And so when we talk about urging the right wing to remember our common humanity, you ain't going to get anywhere singing Kumbaya with these freaks. Because they don't see a common humanity. And don't think you're protected because you're white either. Because if you're white and you're standing up for that one in the White House, well, that just makes you a little bit worse than an N. You're an N lover. Maybe you've never lived in that world. Maybe you've never been around it. But I assure you, it is as real and as true as the sun rising in the east. It is.
Very important. We can't ever fudge the fact that there is a basic line dividing criticism from violence or its advocacy. And that the closer you get to the line and the more responsibility you have, the more you have to think about the echo chamber in which your words resonate. Look, criticism is part of the lifeblood of democracy. Nobody's right all the time. But Oklahoma City proved once again that beyond the law there is no freedom. And there is a difference between criticizing a policy or a politician and demonizing the government that guarantees our freedom and the public servants who implement them. And the more prominence you have in politics or media or some other pillar of life, the more you have to keep that in mind. I acknowledged that in my political career I had on more than one occasion, in the face of a government policy I disagreed with or a practice I thought was insensitive, referred in a disparaging way generally to federal bureaucrats, as if all of them were arrogant or insensitive or unresponsive. And I have never done it again. You could not read the stories of the lives of the people who perished at Oklahoma City and not respond in that way. Now, I have to tell you that...
Now, see, understand, if I was sitting in a room full of baggers playing this, at every time he took a pause... You know what they'd say? Monica, huh? I don't know why we didn't throw him out. He's a liar. No matter how much considered intelligence you offer, they're still thugs. And maybe I'm running contrary to what Bill's preaching here. But I live in the real world. I had an email earlier, and it was seriously asked, and it wasn't asked in any. It was asked respectfully, and I think it's fair to follow up with this question. Marty asked earlier. I hate to sound cruel, Bob, but how many of those miners, those 85 waiting to be rehired, those 29 who died, listen to Limbaugh, how many of them are teabaggers? How many McCain, Palin bumper stickers are on their vehicles? How many of those people, especially those unfortunate 29, actually voted to kill themselves when they rejected the union? Marty says, just a question. Sorry to ask. Never be sorry to ask a question. Even when it's a painful question, that probably means it has to be examined. And you know what? The fact of the matter is, I didn't know any of those who died personally. But I know the kind of signage you see on vehicles pulling away from massy work sites. And yeah, they've still got their McCain Palin bumper stickers. And yeah, half of however many people were in that organizing drive did vote to keep the union out. And I don't know what the voting status was of those who died, but out of those 29, is it safe to surmise that one or two at least voted to keep the union out? I think it is. And in the end, that winds up to be, Jesus, a suicide vote. I've seen Massey workers when we've held demonstrations and protests. And I've heard the language that's used. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I have. and I know the violent rhetoric that goes into it. Long before this mine ever blew up, Massey workers were threatening the lives of people that I work with. And you will forgive me if I say that it because there's no getting over what gets drilled into your head down in the basement of the Baptist church by the little old blue-haired ladies. They tell, at least down south, they tell a Bible story with some real vim and real vigor. And there are lessons to them. You know, when Pharaoh issued the last curse, and Moses said, I'm rubber and you're glue, and it bounces off me and it sticks to you, and the firstborn male of every Egyptian household was said in that myth to have died. It doesn't matter if that really happened. That is a lesson. That is a lesson that stuff can come back on you. In the Indian subcontinent and other parts of the world, they call it karma. And I don't think Marty's inquiry is at all improper. It's painful, but it's not improper.
I had a great time fighting with Newt Gingrich and Tom DeLay and Dick Armey. I love seeing that picture of him in the Post today, the outline army with his cowboy hat on. I remember when he called Hillary a socialist. I remember when Newt Gingrich, shortly after becoming Speaker-elect, said that Hillary and I were the enemies of normal Americans. It didn't bother me a bit. I was glad to get in and mix it up. But what we learned from Oklahoma City is not that we should gag each other or that we should reduce our passion for the positions we hold, but that the words we use really do matter, because there's this vast echo chamber, and they go across space and they fall on the serious and the delirious alike. They fall on the connected and the unhinged alike. And I am not trying to muzzle anybody, but one of the things that the conservatives have always brought to the table in America is a reminder that no law can replace personal responsibility. And the more power you have, and the more influence you have, the more responsibility you have. Look, I'm glad they're fighting over health care and everything else. Let them have at it. But I think that all you have to do is read the paper every day to see how many people there are who are deeply, deeply troubled. We know now that there are people involved in groups, that these hatred groups, the Oath Keepers, the 3%ers, the others. 99% of them will never do anything they shouldn't do, but there are people who advocate violence and anticipate violence.
Yeah. Now, let me just tell you, and I'm going to ring up the phone if you want to. It's Friday on the front porch. We don't get to talk again until Monday. But I'm going to take that one step further. Bill Clinton says, I don't want to gag anybody, nor do I. But you know what? We do need some change. We need to fix the problems. Try to get the genie back in the bottle that Bill Clinton let loose in 1996 with the Telecommunications Act. That's where this conglomerated, concentrated ownership of media that has reduced the for-profit media to such a sham comes from. Ronald Reagan killed the Fairness Doctrine. Bill Clinton opened the doors for the right wing to own the public airwaves. That needs to be done, and the sooner rather than later. Second, at a word from Bill Clinton, if he stood up and said, we on our side need to get serious about talk radio and about buying and owning radio stations, and about making sure there's a generation of people who know what to do behind a microphone. We need to get serious about that. You know what? There would be millions. There would be millions of donor dollars out there to build a talk radio media infrastructure that could cut that 1,000 hours to 1 hour statistic to something that resembles a level playing field. And Lord Bill, God Almighty Bill, how we need you to say something like that. Lord, we sure enough do. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim.
They don't need no stinking badges. You know, these idiots are just like the citizens of Rock Ridge in Blazing Saddles. When Obama was elected, every one of them was saying, "The president is a nerd." And that's exactly what the thing is all about. You hit it right on the head.
It's hard to avoid the obvious when it's right in front of your face. The only problem, Jim, is that a lot on our side are doing everything in their power to talk around it because they don't even like to admit that that's how America still is. But you're a Southern man. I'm a Southern man. We know, don't we?
I grew up in South Carolina, the only state that tried to make war on the rest of the country. And believe you me, I grew up with that shit and had crosses burned in front of our home when my father was the mayor of that town. I know what I'm talking about.
So what does it take for us to get across to people who maybe don't have the experience that you and I share? How do we explain it to them?
Just let them see one of those flaming torches burned on their lawn, or let them have, you know, their tires slashed, or let them write nasty things across your garage door. They'll find it out soon enough. I was talking to this woman the other night who's a staunch Roman Catholic, and, you know, I was asking her to please explain to me exactly how this is going on and what does penance mean. No answer. And I told her, I said, you know, I said, you guys, or the communist Chinese, took a great lesson from the Roman Catholic Church in the art of brainwashing.
Indeed. Indeed. And, you know, you mentioned the church. I heard today that Benedict celebrated his 83rd birthday by saying that, in the words of, I guess, some Vatican press flack, praying for the church. You know, not to be too hard on the man or anything, but how about praying to the thousands upon praying for the thousands upon thousands of and thousands upon thousands of victims of the church? You think that might be a prayer that reached the nostrils of the Almighty before a prayer for the church itself?
Bob, those prayers don't hit the ceiling, as far as I'm concerned. You know, they have, in the first place, if they're really sorry about what they did, maybe they need to give up some of the property they have and, you know, to really get into this thing and repay some of those victims and their families who've been forever scarred by so-called men of the cloth. I'll tell you that, it just makes me very angry, and I realize I might not be making a whole lot of sense tonight, but I do understand where you're coming from, and I do understand the mentality of these people. They just don't care. Their whole thing is built around their own sense of lack of compassion and humanity and discrimination. They don't like the man's color. They don't like the type of hair he's got. They don't like the type of hair his wife has. And they can't stand it that a black man is in the White House. Just like they couldn't stand the idea that Bill Clinton stole that election, in their opinion, but won it fairly and squarely from Bush the First, who was so stupid he couldn't even read a barcode.
Or didn't, well, not that they couldn't read, didn't know what one was.
That's what I mean. I mean, you know, he was so far removed. And these people are just far removed from reality as he was from his sense of reality, because He didn't have to go out and shop, and yet these people, for some reason, want to identify with that type of thing, and they just cannot overcome their prejudices. I mean, they will labor like scholars, as I told you once before, over the pedigree of their own discriminatory attitudes, but every damn one of them would have snored right through the Sermon on the Mount.
I think you're right. And by the way, another thing that just and they get this from their pulpits too, Jim. They're still not sure that Barack Obama isn't going to wake up some morning and sign an executive order declaring us to be a Muslim nation. And the reason I can say that is, you know, the nuclear arms summit that President Obama hosted, the nuclear security summit.
Exactly.
Well, it had a logo. And the logo was actually based on signage that was developed during the Eisenhower administration. It was simply, basically, it was the arc of an electron traveling in a circle because there was a little dot. But the circle itself blurred out a little bit. And the right wing declared with all the certainty of faith of an ideologue that was a secret signal to the Middle East of Muslim symbolism, because they said it was just like a crescent moon.
Well, that shows you how intelligent they are. That shows you how desperate they are to grasp any.
Well, don't forget paranoid.
Well, I don't know. These people, I don't understand how they could have even gotten out of the first grade with an attitude like that, other than the fact that this stuff is just, for generations, has been bred into them. And I hate to say this, but I wish no man harm. And I'll quote what Khrushchev once said. Sometimes the only way that you can correct a mistake is the grave. And I hope it'll die out, because I don't see any great epiphany coming among any of these people. And when I hear that idiot, Sarah Palin, get up there and talk about Goregate and this, that, and the other, you know, it just, you talk about a blood pressure cuff that you had on in the waiting room listening to Fox, or mine just about goes out the window. I'm just thoroughly pissed off. I just really am. But when you said that about the president and the color of his skin, you hit it just right. That's what it's all about. That is exactly it. They can't stand it that a black man's in the White House.
I mean, this is not to say that were it Hillary Clinton in the White House, as it very easily could have been, that they wouldn't be losing their minds. But they would be losing their minds in a different and not quite as virulent fashion, if you will.
Oh, they would pillory her, too, for not divorcing him and stuff like that. You know, no matter who is in the opposite chair, they're going to find some way, some ad hominem strategy that appeals not to logic, but to the baser instincts of mankind. And that's exactly what they are. They're evil. They can't be reckoned with. They won't listen. They don't want to listen. And it's just that simple, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong, but if the old thing revived, whether it's Joseph Goebbels or George Lincoln Rockwell or whoever, or Timothy McVeigh, or whoever's in charge of the Nazi Party in America today, or the teabaggers or whatever, these people are just angry because they didn't get their way. And they deify people like Ronald Reagan. And you don't have to be a genius to realize what harm we suffered under him. And they forget about the good things that happened under people like FDR and President Carter and Lyndon Johnson. And these people are antichrist to these idiots, these good men.
Indeed. Indeed. Jim, thank you very much for your thoughts.
And I appreciate your let me be on the show, and I hope you had a good trip.
I did. I'm exhausted, but we had a good trip. Those Those were some 19-hour days, and I tell you what, I may be too old for them. I'm not sure, but it felt good to work like that. It really, really did. And the other side of it was I got to be a techie for a while, and I just love being a techie.
Well, good. I'm glad you got the experience, and I'm glad you had a safe trip home.
Thank you, Jim. Have a great weekend.
You're out here.
Bye now. Yeah, I had Rick was kind enough. He got us all polo shirts that said the Rick Smith Show on them. Yeah. And you know, I was producing and I was engineering and I was roadieing. And you know what? I missed doing the show. And there were a couple of nights that we came very close to being able to do a show with me, Rick, and Guy all together. But circumstances literally beyond our control prevented it. But Guy and I and Jake, who is Rick's sidekick, and another young man by the name of Brett, put in a lot of hours, as did Rick, making that happen. And I think at the end, we really, really made an impression. And it was just really neat to see it develop. This can go places. This can really, really become something. And let's keep going. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, good evening, Bob. It's Barry. I called before quite a while ago.
Hey, Barry, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks. I'm a regular listener to Mike Malloy, and he's the fellow that basically turned me on to your show and your network. And I just want to say thank you very much for, you know, continuing to do what you do. You and Mike do fill a need. It's very, very hard to get across a point of view that represents valid discussion, valid progressive and liberal viewpoints in this country. The corporate media obviously has a vested interest in suppressing as much of that as they can. And you guys are doing a great job of it. I just wanted to make a general point that I said something. I don't know. I've been watching the news for a long time. I've been paying attention to a lot of things for a long time. And there's some dynamic that seems to be changing within this last couple of weeks that is very positive for, you know, liberals and progressives. I'm looking at I'm a member of Daily Coast. And I check there all the time. Just looking at the recommended list, I see that, you know, we've got adoption foster care ban ruled unconstitutional. We have a state that was basically saying that, you know, as Arkansas, that said that unmarried people couldn't have rights for foster care and adoption in that state. It was aimed towards the LGBT community, but obviously affected everybody.
Right.
You know.
And there was a quantum leap forward today as well, Barry. I don't know if you saw this or not, but President Obama signed, and, you know, this is doing the right thing. It's not, and it's another case of, you know, no, we haven't gotten rid of don't ask, don't tell. No, we don't have full marriage equity for the gay community yet. But this was one of those steps in the right direction that deserves to be mentioned and absolutely deserves to be highlighted. President Obama has signed an executive order that absolutely makes mandatory that hospitals that take Medicare and Medicaid must, not may, but must, honor the wishes of advanced directives in hospitals and must allow non-family selected and approved members into the hospital rooms.
Right.
And into the decision-making process for patients who are gay.
Right, right. I read that as well. That memorandum, the discrimination against same-sex couples in hospital visitation rights, is how it's titled. That's pretty accurate. The memorandum he wrote does carry quite a bit of weight because it affects all federally, any hospital has gets federal money, and that's virtually all of them, except some very restricted private hospitals. So this is stuff that what I see happening is that it's common sense decisions that are going to polarize the extreme right even further. And, you know, you just keep seeing this happen over and over again. There's something breaking away, though, as these court decisions come down, like today with Arkansas. You know, the National Day of Prayer was ruled unconstitutional today.
Wow, I missed that. That's huge.
Yep, that's Wisconsin, I think. And no doubt they'll try to push that up to the Supreme Court. It was a Wisconsin District Court judge ruled it was a unconstitutional violation of separation of church and state for that National Day of Prayer. So all these things, what's happening is it's taking the culture war. What the right wing has done, what has happened over the past 30 or 40 years is that, my opinion is that corporate power wants to make profit. And they'll latch on to anything they possibly can so that we all fight over what they see as inconsequential things. They don't care about who's gay, who's not gay, who gets married, who doesn't get married.
No, they care about selling widgets.
You got it. They want to maximize their profit. And this is, you know, I'm not saying that a bunch of people actively sit in boardrooms and discuss this and say, what are we going to latch on to next? But it seems to naturally gravitate that way, that they're constantly looking to grab at the most amount of concentrated wealth they can. And they cannot get the middle class to agree with them to follow with that idea that we're going to rip you off, basically. So what they do is they latch on to something like, this one's a communist, this one's a socialist, this one's black, this one's brown, this one's, you know, gay, this one's that, this one's an atheist, and they just take it all together and mix it in a big pot, stir everything up. And the corporate media is now owned by basically five or six major companies. I'm sure they don't sit in the boardroom and say, let's see, what can we introduce into this situation so we can get everybody upset because we have a black president. They don't do that, but effectively they do. And the nation's recoiling from it. The nation as a whole is recoiling from it. I work with Republicans. I work with people that have voted Republican for years. They're disgusted by it. They're sick of it. Barry Goldwater was sick of it. Before he died, he came out and he basically said, you know, this religious stuff that the Republican Party has adopted is insane.
Well, do you remember Steve Atwater? He was the attack dog for George H.W. Bush.
Not Steve, but yeah, Lee.
Lee Atwater. Yeah. Lee Atwater. I'm sorry.
Yeah. On his deathbed,
his brain had been eaten alive by cancer.
Absolutely.
And at the end, he began making mea culpas,
right,
to those whom he'd harmed.
Right. And what has happened is you've got a couple of guys that have continued on in this tradition. You got Pat Buchanan, who really helped start that whole thing back in the 70s with Nixon. And, you know, Buchanan was probably one of the guys that told Ronald Reagan, hey, start your campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi, because we know what that means. That's going to be a good signal to everybody.
Yeah, Pat Buchanan, I hesitate to just, you know, throw the Nazi word around. I don't do it very... But he is. I've come to the conclusion that Pat Buchanan is just a Nazi.
Yeah, well, he's made it quite clear. He doesn't like Jews. He doesn't like blacks. He's one of those guys that has carried forward this. And what's happened is you're starting to see now a couple of the Republican senators, they're starting to back away from all this.
Well, when Tom Coburn comes out and says something not nice at, you know, anything less than fawning praise for Fox News.
Yeah.
You know that something, there's a shift going on, but I don't know if you noticed, but Coburn then had to come on Fox and issue his own mea culpa.
Yeah, well, there's going to be waffling back and forth a little bit, but you can see if they're starting to break. Collins is starting to break. Snow remains very quiet. You know, you got the main twins, you got Voinovich, you got a few others in the north that are, they could break away, and they could just tell McConnell, "No, we're not going to do this anymore."
Well, Voinovich is dangerous because Voinovich is done in January.
Right, right. You could just say, "Hey, I'm not going to buy into this stuff. I'm not following what Mitch tells me to do." So it's only a handful. What's holding back major change now in the government? Is the Senate? It is a key handful of these senators. It's Snow, it's Collins, it's Voinovich, maybe Greg in New Hampshire, although he's, and I live in New Hampshire, by the way, I'm calling you from New Hampshire. That guy's a son of a bitch. He's a dirty bastard. there are a few others, though. And they can be approached, and they can be reasoned with. And what I don't understand is I don't understand the Democrats, the DNC specifically, dumping a whole bunch of money into Maine. That's what they should be doing now. Politically, they should be putting the pressure on these senators by increasing the groundswell, the grassroots support right now. They've got the money to do it. They should be blasting the airwaves locally. And I encourage anybody that's listening here, if you live in the state of Maine, if you live in Ohio, if you live in any state where there's a Republican senator that is even the slightest bit going to be affected by pressure, get on the phone or email or something. Call his office or email his office or write a letter and start, you know, you don't have to be obnoxious. You don't have to be confrontational. You just say, hey, listen, you know, I want to see the country move forward. And this is what I'm hearing from my coworkers that voted for Republicans. They're sick of it. They're sick of this stuff where we bicker about who's gay, who isn't gay, what the flag means, what that means. It's all symbols. It's symbolism. It's people are being encouraged to hate each other based upon who they are or what they believe or where they're from. And it's wrong. This isn't what this country's made of. And this country has been and always will be a liberal nation. I don't care what they say, who says it. We are a liberal nation. And
well, any nation that starts out with at least the high-toned high-toned words of the Declaration of Independence
has
to be a liberal nation. Now,
absolutely.
Granted, those words were crafted by flawed men. There's no getting around it.
And everybody knows they were flawed, and they know they were flawed. They told us they were flawed, and they said, you've got to make the future better for yourselves. You're not going to make the future better for yourselves by attacking each other over your race, over your religion, over who you want to sleep with, or whatever else you decide to do. Within reason, human freedom is what this country is about. Within reason. You know, not box turtles, not John Cornyn's idea that we're going to marry box turtles next. Not the idea that just because somebody says that they don't believe in God doesn't mean they can't be a moral and ethical person and believe in law and believe in the ideals of commonwealth that have made this nation what it is today, the great nation that it is. We could still be the greatest nation on this planet, but we got to learn to live with each other, work with each other, do things so the future's better for our kids. And a lot of Republicans, a lot of people that voted for Republicans are starting to see this. They're getting sick and tired. Sick and tired of the no, you can't. John Boehner on the floor of the Florida House saying, no, you can't over and over again. Like a four-year-old. It's reaching the breaking point. And corporate media can try to cover. They can try to cover. They'll twist. They'll distort. They'll try to cover as much as they can. But it's breaking through anyway. People are just fed up with it.
And, you know, I here's a little example that kind of goes with that. The last time I was in D.C., Barry, we were, working on mountaintop removal. We had what I thought was an act of futility. We had a meeting with a staffer for Senator Voinovich.
Yep.
And, because I figured, no way is this guy going to sign on to the bill. But he's on his way out, and that was part of the calculus. You know, this guy's free now. He really is. He's free. There's nothing that Mitch McConnell can do to him. And so we had a meeting with one of his staffers, and we put forward our case. The young man was very attentive. He looked at us and said, personally, I'm horrified by this, and I will do what I can. And then we said, listen, there's one other little thing you could do. And he said, what's that? And in the minority offices of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works, you could see, and if you've ever been inside the Hart Senate office building, there's a huge atrium. And it has windows that look out onto the atrium. And hanging in the window of that office, looking out onto the atrium, was a black T-shirt with the white letters, friend of Cole, Cole keeps the lights on.
Yep.
And we said to him, look, that thing's hanging there. And we think it is questionable as to whether it's even legal for it to hang there. And no Democrat is going to get that thing removed because, again, that's Jim Inhofe's committee.
Right.
He's the ranking minority member. And we said, you know, we think it might come, it might be a lot better if it came from a member of his own party to get that thing down. And this guy said, well, you know, I'll certainly ask. And do you know, by the end of the day, that T-shirt was gone?
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, we've made a pact with the devil, okay, by burning coal. As you know, and you've said yourself, I think it's the AMA estimates that 24,000 people in this country die.
American Lung Association, yeah.
Yeah, every single year die prematurely from the effects of coal dust. Over 500,000 people suffer from asthma. I suffer from asthma. I mean, that's lost hours, lost work hours, lost school hours, wages, medical costs like you wouldn't believe because we're burning poison and putting it into the air. Forget about global warming for a minute. Just take that into consideration. 24,000 people a year, that's 8 9/11s every year. And these people are nameless and faceless. And this is why things like this can go on and on and on, and nobody does anything about it. Every once in a while, you have something like the, you know, the Great London Fog. I think it was of 1953. We had like 11,000 people die over a very short period of time because they had an inversion, and all that dust and crap that they were burning choked people to death. You know, it's they realized in England, but they still burn coal, but they put scrubbers. They try to clean it up as best they can. We could clean up some of the pollution that we generate when we burn coal. Maybe not the CO2,
but not all of it. The attempt to mitigate acid rain, which involved the installation of scrubbers, even that, you know, that's one of those law of unintended consequences things. We kept it out of the air and we stopped. We took a big bite out of the acid rain, but in so doing, we have created these vast toxic pits, these great big ash dumps, exactly. One of which cut loose in Kingston, Tennessee, a year ago last December. And it was the biggest toxic event in the history of the country. And you could hardly get the poor little attention deficit disorder stricken for-profit media to pay attention to it.
If it had gone down the Potomac, it got into D.C., they might have paid attention, but it didn't quite get that far. I was paying attention. The problem is that we've made this deal. We made it about 200 years ago. This is what started the Industrial Revolution. We never decided to say, hey, you know, maybe we should get away from this stuff before it kills a lot more of us, because the media doesn't ever tell us about this. How many, you have to go and really look to get that report. You've really got to look for it. And it's not the only report. There have been a series of reports. Even Bush's own EPA came out and said something similar to that in 2005. They said tens of thousands of people are dying prematurely from all sorts of things related to the burning of coal, the particulates. But they tried to suppress that report. The media won't report it because the media are, again, beholden to that profit-making goal. And we're not paying the true costs of energy when we burn coal to produce electricity.
No, we're not.
We're not paying anywhere near the true cost of energy when we burn a gallon of gasoline or diesel either. So we're just fooling ourselves. We keep on fooling ourselves into this. People are starting to wake up, though. It's starting to break through. And guys like you and Mike Malloy are doing it from the edges, working in. We need to get somebody, you know, there are Democrats out there. There are liberals. There are progressives out there that have money. I don't. If I had the money, I'd be sending you money, a lot of money.
Bless your heart. I understand, and Barry, that's how we keep on the air, $5 and $10 at a time, and we've got.
No, but we need the big donors.
I was saying what I said about Bill Clinton.
Yeah, exactly. Bill Clinton's got the right idea. There are things he's done that I don't agree with, and he's a flawed human being and all that. But I'll tell you what, his heart is in the right place. He knows where we've got to go as a nation too, and I could appreciate everything he said. One thing I would say is that, you know, Air America tried to survive in a commercial environment, and I think they went around it totally the wrong way.
There's no doubt that thing was doomed from the start, from the minute that they bought massive office space in the middle of downtown Manhattan.
Exactly. You know where the stations are needed? I'll tell you where the stations are needed. They're needed in Des Moines. They're needed in Tuscaloosa. They're needed in Oklahoma City. They're needed in Salt Lake City. They're needed in Gallup, New Mexico.
Preach it, brother.
This is where the liberal voice has to be heard. This is the 5,000-watt station, the 1,000-watt station, not the 50,000-watt station. These people that are in the rural areas of this country are fed 24/7, 365, the same crap they've never heard, and they probably don't listen to NPR. So they don't get anything except Limbaugh, Hannity, O'Reilly. They turn on the TV, they see the same crap. We need to get programs like yours, programs like Mike's, Tom Hartman, you name it, what's left of the liberal people that were working within Air America. Yeah, there are plenty of other voices. We need to get them into those small markets, those rural markets, because...
And that begins, as I noted, with going back and fixing everything that was wrong with the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Yeah, it's going to take quite a bit to do that.
It may approach an AT&T level of divestiture, but the fact of the matter is you should not be able to own more than one station in one market.
Yep, I tend to agree with you there. I mean, you've got signs that there are people that will vote for liberals and progressives. Look at Rocky Anderson in Salt Lake City.
Sure.
I mean, there's a great example of a guy that, you know, hey, this is Utah. Listen to this guy. He's further to the left than any. He's an Alan Grayson, you know.
He is behind the Zion curtain.
Yep. There are people like that that work in those states. Look at Grayson himself. He's in a very heavily Republican district, and the guy is beating the Republicans in their own primary. I mean, people want to hear the truth. They want to hear principled people stand up and say, this is what I believe. These are the basic rights of human beings and Americans in this country. We're not going to let things, these false symbols get in our way of the future and our kids' future and everybody, raising everybody's boats in the common wealth that we all have together. And this is what people want to hear. It's not populism. It's not even liberalism. It's just truth. This is what people want. And I'm telling you, I'm hearing Republicans say this, that they're sick and tired of hearing Republicans come out with all this negative stuff. They have nothing positive to say. They have no solutions. So that's what I wanted to say tonight. I'm going to let you go because I've yapped for way too long. Tied you up here.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. I really appreciate your call. You didn't talk too long, but we are near the end of the program, and I hope you'll call again soon.
I really appreciate what you do. Try to listen to you every night. A lot of times it's the rebroadcast, so I don't get the call in, but... tonight I caught you live. I wanted to say hello.
I'm really glad you did. Have a great weekend, Barry.
You too. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Barry calling from New Hampshire. It is pretty much time to fold up the tent for this foreshortened week. Everything's normal next week. Normal, normal, normal. Extra normal. But I want to, based on just the general tenor of the show this evening, I want to close with something that sort of makes sense, if you're able to follow my wandering little train of thought. You know, I get a bunch of right-wing story pitches. Well, I got one today asking me, and I had this guy on the show a million years ago. He's the punchline of a joke. Wanting me to have Robert Peters of Morality in Media on the show to ballyhoo the fact that Senator Orrin Hatch, in the middle of all the problems that we have, found time to take Attorney General Eric Holder to task over whether the federal government is going to enforce the obscenity laws. How many statistics have been mentioned tonight about who dies of what and for what reasons? That Barry just brought up the American Lung Association study that found that 24,000 people a year die because we insist on continuing to burn coal for power. Orrin Hatch, meanwhile, is worried about obscenity. You know, clearly that's a play to his Zion Curtain peanut gallery. Well, look there, Marvelline and Eunice and Mabel, wives. Look there. He's standing up for our right to not be obscene. You know. And Bob Peters, Morality and Media president. Okay. I just got to do this. One of my favorite jokes in the world. A cop walks into a barber shop, looks at the barber, says, "Bob Peters in here?" Barber just looks at him and goes, "No, just cut hair." Ba-dum-ba. So, you know, Orrin Hatch is worried about obscenity in this country. Well, let me run you real quickly over to the New York Times, and I got to work this kind of fast. But there's a New York Times Magazine profile piece, called by Frank Bruni called Doctor Does It All, and it's about Dr. Oz. You know who Dr. Oz is, right? He's a spinoff of Oprah. He's this do-it-all guy, world-renowned cardiothoracic surgeon, yada, 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 yada. And now he's got a TV show where he talks to people about their health. Well, I'm going to read you a segment from it, and I'm going to go as quickly as I can. On a morning not long ago, around a conference table high in the NBC building in Rockefeller Center in Manhattan, the challenge before Dr. Oz and dozens of assistants was less obviously urgent. They talked of testicles. Specifically, they discussed what sort of props might accurately and tastefully mimic said sexual organs in a television demonstration on the Dr. Oz show of how men should examine theirs for tumors and cysts. What about silly putty, someone asked to smiles and contained laughter. What about a pecan or walnut with some padding around it, someone else asked. Bean bags were mentioned. So was cotton. There wasn't any quick resolution. I read that earlier today. At about the same time that I was reading Bob Peters wanting to use time on this program to lavish praise on Orrin Hatch for grilling Eric Holder about obscenity. And I saw that line, they discussed what sorts of props might accurately and tastefully mimic said sexual organs in a television demonstration. Why? Why does it have to be tasteful? Why do we have to have tasteful balls on TV? Why can't we treat testicles for what they are, a part of the human body? See, we can say it, testicles. Gonads. Whatever. Why do we have to worry about whether it's tasteful? Well, because this is a nation founded in the sickness of Puritanism. Just is. And for the life of me, I feel like somebody looking on this planet from an alien point of view going, wait a minute, men who don't examine their testicles periodically die from cancer. Why can't we just get on TV and say, hey guys, learn to examine your testicles and not be all cute about it or precious? The same with breast cancer or ovarian cancer. Does this make sense? Does it make sense to not be able to do it? Why are words more worrisome than the diseases themselves? Testicle! You know,
I'm Mike Wallace.
I'm Morley Safer.
Vagina!
Yeah, Steve Martin. Why does that, and I'm not criticizing Steve Martin. Because we are upside down, backwards, and sideways in this country about what's really obscene. Starvation is obscene. Needless death from disease is obscene. Teaching a man how to examine his testicles without having dirty little minds go somewhere? God, Bob Peters, no, just cut hair. Bob Peters would probably be protesting outside of NBC's offices if it wasn't sufficiently tasteful, that discussion of testicles. And we wonder why it's hard to get anything done. But that's the week, and that's the program, and I thank you all for joining in. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Like I said, next week is normal, extra normal. Thanks to all of you who helped keep this program going by your kind and generous contributions. via the snail mail address and the PayPal button. Getting choked for some reason. PayPal button. It really is what stands. It's why we're here. And until such time as the deep pockets figure out that this is important, it's the only way we stay alive. We are halfway. We are halfway to our April fundraising goal. So that's a good thing because we're halfway through April. Another $1,000 and I can shut up. Thanks to everybody who makes these programs go, from our webmaster Sue, to Lottie in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, our Southeast correspondent, Matt Osborne of OsborneInc.com, those who post and essay on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com blog, among them being Reverbo and Sue, otherwise known as the Ranting Keyboard. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And it was a week with a lot of hard work in it. But I'm home. I'm back in my happy place, my happy little studio in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, Virginia, and I can't tell you how happy I am to be here. Pittsburgh is, in fact, one of my favorite cities in the United States, without a doubt. But there ain't no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. Amen. Amen. Still, I was really, really proud of what we were able to accomplish on Rick Smith's behalf up at the state meeting of the AFL-CIO in Pittsburgh. It was several days of pretty serious work, but we proved something. We proved that the horn can do for a fraction of the cost what major media organizations do for tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not a million. Because we broadcast those proceedings, and we did so, I would say, pretty competently. And therein lies a roadmap to a future that, frankly, liberals, whether you be a pro-labor liberal, a pro-environment liberal, a gender equity liberal, whatever kind of liberal you are, this is the road we must absolutely go down. And like I said, I was proud to accomplish what we did accomplish. We put up 3 days of three-hour sessions and made it work. And down the road, there is a way to do it with even more verve and even more panache and even more equipment, even more people. But we did amazing work. And I met some amazing people, too. Had some absolutely magnificent conversations with some labor activists there in Pennsylvania. And was pleased to get to know the folks that I indeed did get to know. But I'm home now, and I'm happy about that. And I'm home on a Friday. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn. And what a day for it. Oh, my goodness gracious, I just about had to be dragged into the studio. It is exquisite outside. High, fleeting clouds in a blue sky. Warm, warm spring spring sunshine on your back. Just a beautiful day. Sweet, sweet spring day in April. So come on up on the front porch. Put your feet up on the rail. We got a bunch of long necks in ice. Sweet tea for those of you who don't do that. And let's cuss and discuss. See what's on your mind. I've been away from the microphone for four solid days. I don't know what's on your mind. I've been focused on the things at hand, although I've tried to keep up with the news as best I could along the way. And, I don't think we're going to be wanting for stuff to discuss this evening. And in a way, you know, I could save this for Moran Monday, but it wouldn't be fresh then. I wonder sometimes if Flush Flimball is one of those guys we ought to retire from competition in Moran Monday, but I say no. I say no. And why? Because the oxymoron constantly lowers the bar for himself into new and even more ignorant levels of manifestations of stupidity. Now, I don't know if you've been following this, but simply because it's something that happened around here, and of course, you know, you can always expect a dog to his to return to his own vomit. You can expect that Rush Limbaugh would try to find some way, to capitalize or make hay off of the misery that arose out of the Massey disaster at Upper Big Branch. Now, I'm not going to. I'm not going to spend the evening on Upper Big Branch. You know everything there is to know. But, this business with Flush Flimball is a whole brand new level of stupid. And I mean that. And it goes back to last Friday. Last Friday, Flush Flimball asked the following with regard to the Upper Big Branch disaster.
There you go. We worked on mine safety. Byrd, Rockefeller, we worked on mine safety in the Senate. But more needs to be done. Well, they didn't get anything done. Was there no union responsibility for improving mine safety? Where was the union here? Where was the union? Now, the union's generally holding these companies up, demanding all kinds of safety. Why were these miners continuing to work in what apparently was an unsafe atmosphere?
Okay, so you got that, right? Rush Limbaugh, dumber than a bag of homemade stupid, arguing that it was the UMWA's fault that Upper Big Branch blew up.